call this meeting to order on June 18th, 2025. Let's see, to begin with, let's see, our Vice Chairman, Mr. Jones, will lead us in the pledge.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any public comments?
No one's on that side.
In fact, it looks kind of empty over there.
Yep.
A motion for the acceptance of the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second.
Motion, we have a second from...
I'll second.
Mr. Bunker. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Chair's report.
Nope, back up.
What did I skip? Agenda, oh, approval of the minutes for the previous meeting.
I move we approve the meeting, previous meeting agenda. Or no, the minutes from the previous meeting.
Minutes of the previous, we need a second.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion, a second, anyone in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? For chair reports, we have a couple of letters. Dear Overton Power District, thank you much for your generous scholarship you gave me. I'm honored to have received it. It will be very helpful as I pursue a career at BYU. Appreciate all that OPD does in both valleys. Mr. Hardy, Russell Hardy.
This was received after the outage in Overton.
What does it say? Overton Power, thank you for your speedy response to, this is the outage. Thank you. Oh, Lacey Horn. That's Kyle's little girlfriend right there. Sorry about that. Dear OPD, thank you much for awarding me the OPD scholarship. I really appreciate your generosity for me and the other students you awarded. I really don't know you that well, but my dad says you're one of the funniest guys around, and I think your wife is super cool. Thank you again for being Rebecca Jensen, which is Josh Jensen's daughter. No, Jacob. From Persian Valley.
Originally. Rebecca's in Logandale.
Yeah. They turned traitor on us.
Yeah, they turned. Yeah. I don't know if they wear blue, but... Their kids do.
The kids do, so.
On behalf of Virgin Valley High School, our deepest gratitude for your general support of the senior class of 2025. Thanks to your contributions, scholarships totaling over $200,000. We were awarded to help our graduates pursue their goals beyond high school. Your investment in our students' future and for a gift of financial assistance, a powerful message that you believe in their potential and dreams. These scholarships are changing lives, and none would have been possible without your generosity. Thank you for being a central part of your student's journey and your kindness and commitment to education, Virgin Valley High School. That's very nice.
Yeah.
OPD, thank you for your generosity in awarding me this scholarship. It will help my education and focus on study. Thank you again for your kindness. It means everything. Amber Anderson. And Andrew Cox says, Dear OPD, thank you for your general contribution to my future. This scholarship will be immense help to me and my family. The cost of college is very expensive and every dollar counts. I will not squander this opportunity and this gift you have afforded me. Andrew Cox.
He's a good kid.
And then Lindsay Marshall, she says, thank you for... I'm so thankful to be receiving this scholarship. The scholarship will help me follow my dreams, attend Utah State, full-time student, major in wildlife, ecology, and management. This is because college out-of-state costs are high, necessary funds to pay for the scholarship, so help me and my family so much. Thank you for selecting me, Lindsay Marshall. Is that Virgin Valley?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very nice. Oh, do you want me to read these other two?
Just tell us their names.
Very nice one from Oliver West, another from Sarah Reyes, and Sydney Anderson.
Wonderful.
Is that relation to the Anderson boys that used to be on the board?
I don't believe so.
Sydney is Travis. Is that Travis's brother?
Yeah, that's Travis's daughter.
Yeah. Travis and
Natalie.
Yeah.
No.
He's trying to take two. Okay. We're missing our attorney.
Wasn't he gone? Is he?
He's out of country.
Yeah, he's in Netherlands or somewhere.
Can you think of anything for an attorney's report, Mr. Jones?
He told us he was going to be gone.
Okay.
He's a super excused absence.
Very good. You will have a report to the office. All right, a manager's report.
All right, we are going to start with safety first, so Kyle will kick us off.
Okay, let's talk about the new lock operations report.
I didn't have a video.
Yeah. Wow, that's a full house.
Did not download? We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, for the first safety first, we had a safety meeting June 12th, which was last Thursday. The topics for that meeting were SDS, which is safety data sheets, and cancer awareness. We had very good attendance this month, 62 attendees. It's higher, you'll notice too, because we have more interns and summer help that took that attendance up. I think if I understand right, we have 68 employees right now.
I was just going to ask that.
So if I'm correct, that's 68. So either way, we still had a very good attendance at safety meeting this month. This safety meeting also, we made some changes too. Usually we've held a meeting in Overton, which is our primary meeting, and then we come in the afternoon, same day, to do the meeting here in this room for those few that couldn't make it to the Overton meeting. Well, we've monitored that and seen that the meeting here in Mesquite hasn't had as much attendance, and so it doesn't create as much dialogue nor input is given. So we decided to combine that meeting and only hold it in Overton as one meeting for all of the employees. We expressed we hope that every employee is able to make it to that meeting in Overton, and it definitely showed at this one that it's been very valuable. We had a great meeting because of it. Outage report for the month of May. We had 3 planned outages and then 2 unplanned outages. The planned outages are just basic transformer replacements. The other one, the circuit cut-in, is for the Tesla chargers up there at Glendale at AMPM. So that's progressing. And then the last two, the unplanned outages, are the poles damaged by fire, which Jack just read about that thank you note from Ms. Horn. It's split into 2 different outages because the bulk of that was 377 customers were brought back on within under an hour. But then there's the one customer, D.L. Smith's appliance repair shop and his house, weren't brought on for 13 hours is what it ended up taking us. Those men started at 8:30 that night and then worked through the night repairing that pole, replacing that pole and transformers and all that, and getting that service back on 13 hours later. So they worked hard at it. Very proud of them. Definitely a long night for them, though. They were tired by that next morning.
Did Audie come out and help you?
Who's that?
Audie.
Is that DL's helper?
Yeah.
No.
Audie Talbot?
DL was there the whole time.
Okay.
He was there the whole time.
You were
there. But yeah, we had good help that night. Service installations for the month of May. We had 43 residential and 1 commercial. Residential are continually in the Canyon Crest and Dinosaur substations, which is Pulte, Sun City, everything back here from the county line clear to the state line up against Arizona. So that area. In Wap Valley, we had the 4 in Whipple substation. For the year totals for service installations, it's below average, I would have to say. it's looking like. We've got 44 for this month, but then comparing those to the past prior years, it's just definitely lower for what I'm seeing. But we'll see how the rest of the year fills out. Hope you all were able to look at the awesome article that Vernon was able to write for us on the website, OPD5 website. We had a training that we held in here in Mesquite. We reached out to all the tree trimmers and landscapers that are in the Mesquite area. It took us about a month to get feelers out to everybody, and we invited them to come to our warehouse and have a training with us to not only give us some safety training, but then also to build that relationship with them. We're kind of twofold of what we want to do. We obviously want to teach them how to be safe around our lines, but also we want them to be able to be familiar with us and call when they have questions about, hey, I'm working around this transformer or around these power lines. Am I okay? We had an incredible training with them that day. Both Omar Vallejo and Steve Barlow gave that training. About 20 people from the community, 20 employees of these contractors around the area. It was just a great training. And one thing that I have to commend Omar and Steve for is we want to make sure that everybody was able to receive this training. So Steve started the training and did a very good job. And it's very tough when you haven't given a lot of trainings to keep that flow and keep that dialogue and keep it two-way. Well, not only that, but we added on where Omar would follow that up and give it in Spanish. So we did it in English, and then we did it in Spanish, and just creating that two-way dialect, it was excellent. They did an incredible job. So, and we set the bar high with this training. We plan on keep going with it, not only here in this valley, but we're going to adopt it in Overton area and keep moving forward with it.
Kyle, who would they call?
We hand out my card
or whatever. They call you.
Me, so we hand out cards for, well, obviously Omar and Chris Felix are the two that we recommended first, because Chris Felix is all over this valley, and he's the mayor, right? Like, everybody knows him, and everybody loves him. So Chris Felix is a good contact, but also Omar was a good contact, and I hand out my card as well. You know, I'm not opposed to taking what they think is just a minimal phone call, like just to say if they're going to make a safe choice, and we do not want them to feel like they can't call and ask if what they have planned for that day or what they're going to be working around is safe or not.
So I think that's good. They don't have to go through.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to get to talk to the right person.
Sure, and sometimes you kind of, you know, these employees that were here that day aren't going to call the front office,
right,
and say, this is what I'm working on. They're not going to feel comfortable to do that. So that's what we want to do, is meet and greet with them and show them our face and really get to know them so that they feel comfortable calling us, you know.
If you talk to them about call before you dig.
We did, yeah. We had
kind of
pretty
a procedure
good
there.
Call before you dig. We talked about the pad mount transformers and switches, and then also the...
How close to put shrubs.
Shrubs and brush, yeah. Which, that's a tough one, but yes, we did. We did talk about that, so, you know, because by the time it gets to their level, they've already been told where it's got to go, but hopefully they keep a mind to it, and maybe they'll start asking questions for our behalf. So we had a very good training, though.
We're going to make this an annual training, and I did instruct Kyle and his staff that I would like to double the attendees in 2026. So we had 20. I'd like to see 40 men in the warehouse. We held it on our lunch hour. Our crew worked through their lunch, and I said, if you can get people there, we'll buy pizza and give them pizza and soda for lunch if they will just come and listen to us for 1 hour about line safety. And we had such good response. I've received multiple thank yous about us holding that. I feel like that's when I talk about our contribution to the communities that we serve, this is our contribution. It's our responsibility to teach them that line safety. And it was, I think, really well received. We had a number of people who were invited who chose not to come. And after they talked to the people who did come, said, we'll come next year, which that was my goal. So
they can rest assured that we're just trying to, our interest is to make sure that they're going to be safe.
There is no record of anybody who attended. If you have a business license, if you have insurance, we do not care. We are monitoring nothing except for education. And so I think that once they saw what our message was and how it was received, we will continue this, I hope, forever.
Yeah. What? Where did that appear, that story?
On the OPT5 website.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on our social media.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. That's great. Great stuff.
Yeah, very good article. Next, I was going to teach you about a practice that we've been doing when we, as needed. This pole here in this picture was tested as failed by our engineering team with our pole density tester. Strategically, they go out through our system and monitor those poles. This one was found to be failed. Well, our teams here in Mesquite couldn't get it on their schedule immediately. So rather than just leave it lay and hope that it stands through the wind that we've been having, we're able to use this pole enforcer tool. That's what it's called. Takes these big silver, they're galvanized iron pieces. You drive one alongside the one side of the pole and then another on the other side of the pole, and then you band around them, and it creates a sturdy, safe pole at that point that we can then schedule when we have time, fall, winter, whatever time allows. Right now with it's up on the park up towards
Maryland Red.
Thank you very much. Yes. Anyways, during this time of year, we don't necessarily want to be driving out through their lawn and tearing it all up when people are using the parks. So strategically, we just sturdied it off, and then we'll come back to it when we can fit it in the schedule. So these are roughly an 8-foot-long piece of iron. It drives in about half of that distance. This jib against the pole is what is used to lift not only the piece of iron up against the pole, but also that air hammer that they're lifting up right now. That air hammer will go up on top of that piece of iron and drive it in. I was told this one only took about 7 minutes to drive in the ground. There's been some others that have been much harder to do, but this was a very good one right here. This next piece is supposed to be...
You've got to approve access. He sent you a request.
I tried this out earlier, but then...
request denied.
On my...
Do you have your airplane mode on?
I do, yep. That's why. Thank you. Technical difficulties.
So check your email now.
This makes me feel so much better.
We are secure.
There it is.
I'm so grateful for IT. It's a very quick video. But
show us one more time. That went fast.
That's it, essentially. And it's just like a jackhammer, like you see them along the highway, driving that jackhammer, but it's just that air power just drives that piece of steel down into the ground. So these are engineered pieces. This is a 65-foot pole. Well, before we determine which piece of equipment to get, we reach out to the engineering, and they have these pieces that are built for that particular pole. So it's not just whimsical, you go out there and grab a piece of iron and drive it in there. It's built for that structure and for the class of that structure. This next slide here, am I back to the one?
Yeah, try. Oh, that's here.
Okay. This next pole here shows some other tools that might be used for the same piece of equipment. This is on neighboring utility. I'm a lineman. I'm always looking out the windows. I'm driving around and seeing what else is out there. This is down off the 95 in Vegas in the Henderson area next to the Auto Mall. Clearly, they wanted to get their pole higher for whatever reason, so they needed that 5 foot of height. And this is the same piece of equipment. It shows you how strong and durable those pieces are alongside those poles. It's incredible. They're able to cut that pole off, and bring it up, lift it up there, and then drive those pieces in and band it back together. And it's been that way for quite a few years that I've seen it. So,
just did you pull over tools on the 95 and take that picture?
I looked up on Google Earth and got it done real quick yesterday. Yeah, we talked about it, and I saw the interest, and I thought, you know, that'd be a good one to throw in there. It shows just how sturdy and how strong those pieces of equipment are and what technology can do for us to buy us time while we can schedule out those projects to... Obviously, NV Energy is going to go and put a new pole in here eventually, but just gives us options. So, any other questions, comments, thoughts? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. All right, next up we're going to have Randall with engineering.
Oh, sorry. on the Long Draw Switch Yard and Raptor substation, the contractor is pulling in the control wire to all the pieces of equipment. We have received an update on our delayed above ground steel, and we should have one Raptor in July and Long Drive in August. So those should be forthcoming.
Is it working, Randall?
Well, I'm pushing a button.
Here, I'll do it for you.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen. This is for the 138 Raptor, Long Drive to Raptor line. They pulled that in this last week and got it dead-ended, clipped in, and completed. This week, they're pulling in the OPGW on that line. This is in Tortoise Substation. This is part of the Tortoise to Gila 138 line. These will be the foundations taking the outgoing line into the right-of-way. We had to skip over, if you guys remember, we have part of the right-of-way that we don't have granted to us yet. So they completed all the foundation on the Mesquite side, and they moved over onto the Tortoise side, and they're going to work back towards the right-of-way that we haven't received, hoping that we'll have that within the next month. So, the next slide, Stephen. This is the metering foundation pole. This is out heading out towards just past Yucca, going out to Mesa substation towards Lincoln. And we do not have the switches currently. And so we put this project, completion project, off to November of this year. Fortunately, Kevin has a workaround to meter the escape project. So we'll be doing some hand calculations and doing it by hand and for the next few months until we're able to get this metering structure up and going. This is the Maverick store. We've had quite the controversy in Overton about whether it's coming or not. It is coming. They've paid their fees. And so this is next to the Overton Post Office, and Maverick will be building another gas station there on that property.
How much of that existing overhead line are we going to put underground during that project?
We're going to pretty much from the street to street, we're going to try to get underground all the way in front of Rainbow Apartments and also that lot there. It's a county requirement now, right, to put it underground. And they'll be paying for that infrastructure. So you remember a couple months ago we had a gas tanker northbound that crashed and caused the freeway shutdown. And Google Earth, Google Maps was sending people onto our line road, and we had people getting stuck and detoured. And so we, as community service, we put up a sign, just a reminder sign for those who aren't familiar with our area and some of those who are still very familiar with our area, just as a reminder that there is a rough road area to go through, and you really need to have a high clearance and four-wheel drive to guarantee getting through there. WEC has sent us a questionnaire regarding our registration status, and we returned that questionnaire this past week, and by the next board meeting I should have a report on their findings, on what they're going to suggest and ask us to do as in part of our registration. Mm-hmm.
What is, you said WEC?
WEC and NERC. They're coordinating councils that kind of have jurisdiction over areas. So WEC is the Western United States that encompasses Canada down to Mexico, California, us. And NERC is the nationwide organization.
So they have to approve our projects?
They will potentially have to approve some of the things we're doing in the future.
Really? Yeah. Because we're now a power provider with the solar out here.
Yeah.
We're no longer under Nevada Power's umbrella. We're now feeding into Nevada Power system. So
we're going to talk about that in an executive session.
Okay. We're going to look into that, as I remember.
Yes.
So we've answered the questionnaire, and now we'll wait to see what their response is on what requirements we're required to meet.
I don't know who that is.
Can you hear us, Dale?
I can hear you.
Okay.
That was mine.
We can hear you.
Okay, that's my report, unless you guys have any questions.
Thank you. All right, Kevin with SubOps.
Okay. Do you want to go to that?
You want to go to the...
The other one first.
Yeah.
Sure.
This one, right?
Can you blow that up to where we can see it? So what I've got here is I build this spreadsheet every year right after summer just so that I know where our loads are, what we need to do, kind of adjust the system to make things work better for the next summer. And what I've got up here is, this is Mesquite area. We've got the Canyon Crest substation, the Dinosaur substation, all the substations down here. But what I've got is, you know, anything you see in red needs work. Anything in orange, well, this is urgent. This needs to be looked at seriously. And the yellow is, we need to start getting a plan together to make things happen. But you can see right now, the Dinosaur substation, 77%. And we've got plans in place to move all of this stuff, but it just takes time. But so Dinosaur's load is going to move to Falcon Ridge, and some of, well, it's not up here, but you can see up here, Pulsifer sub, we're at 93% of Pulsifer sub. And when I say 93%, we have...
That's in town here, right?
Yeah. And right now, 93% is... When we get to 70% loading, that's when we need to start looking at a plan to move some of that load off. That doesn't mean we're overloaded on that. That means that we have a contingency plan that if something happens to that transformer at 90%, we're not able to fill that contingency plan on our summer peaks. So we're not necessarily overloaded, but we need to get something in place. And that's what... We've got two transformers coming from the Mesquite substation. We're going to rebuild that substation. Painted Hills, we're going to move a transformer to Painted Hills to take some of that load off. And some of this load will go to Falcon Ridge. Some of this load will go to Falcon Ridge from Dinosaur. And then this Mesquite sub will be, this is with the new transformer in place. We're at 42 and 39%. So it's looking good once we get those in place. We're sufficient for quite a bit. But up here, you'll see Canyon Crest is at 56. When I start seeing 56 to 60, I start looking 6 years down the road, what we're going to need to do, 5 or 6 years. This 77%, we should have a plan in place to take care of that. But this is kind of what I do to get things sorted. So that 93%, we're not changing. We had a study done that suggested we change both these transformers out to 20 MVA transformers. We're going to take the bulk of this load and move it to Falcon Ridge also. So you can see I'm relying a lot on Falcon Ridge to move all of that stuff to Falcon Ridge. Mesquite's getting rebuilt. Painted Hills is getting rebuilt, or adding a bay to it. So that when all of this is said and done, we'll have a good solid system again on our distribution system. And I don't know if you want me to review any of this, if it all looks...
How far out are you, something like the red, some of your critical ones, are they going to be in the next few weeks or months, or are we at this?
Mesquite sub transformers coming, it'll be here the first of 2026.
So we're still got to get through this year.
We got to get through this summer. Yeah, this is going to have to be this way through this summer. And this is 2024's load. We've done some rearranging, we've done some changing to actually build, you know, Falcon Ridge is up and running. We're pulling some load to Falcon. Some of this is going different places. So especially this one you see at Pulsifer, we're not at 93 anymore. We're more like 75, 80, because we've moved some of that load to Falcon Ridge. We plan on moving more, but we have some cable that needs to be pulled before we can pull the rest of it off. So Mesquite sub, we're in the planning stages right now. We've got transformers ordered. We've got the long lead items ordered, but it's still a year out before we get all those items, and then we got to put it together. So hopefully by next summer we'll be a lot closer here. Pulsifer, we've got a second transformer coming for Falcon Ridge, and that Pulsifer load, we can move a lot more to Pulsifer. If you look at Pulsifer now, Falcon Ridge, we're at 26%, but when I move everything there, we're going to be up to 60% or better. So that's why we're looking at that second transformer Pulsifer substation.
Raptor, though, that'll take a lot of that load that's on that end.
It'll take a little bit, yeah. Yeah, it will. But there's only so much pathways that you have. You've got two sets of cables between Falcon Ridge and Raptor that you can take that load from Raptor to anywhere else. So Falcon is really the pivotal area.
When you say the percentage, that's percentage of the rated capacity of the transformer?
Mm-hmm.
So they can go over rated sometimes.
They can. They go to 125%.
Yeah, okay. So even though it's almost a year off, well, seven or eight months off, chances are pretty good that even if it gets to 100 for a few days or whatever
the heck it is. And like I say, these numbers are the most extreme in the summer.
Sure.
It's not your constant load, but that's if everybody fires up once or whatever.
It's like from 2 in the afternoon to 7 or 8 in the evening.
Yeah.
Hottest days of the summer. So it's...
But that's good planning.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to do that or you're going to fall behind and you're going to get caught. So.
It's a good spreadsheet. Menace would be proud.
Anyway, this is kind of my chart to tell you, but this is Overton. And Overton, we're looking pretty good, except for Whipple substation starting to climb. We've got a new substation on the 10-year plan. That's in the works. We've got some engineering started on that. We've got a plan. We've got the land secured. I'm pretty sure we got the land secured already. And so it's in the works. And then once we get that new substation online, Whipple and Overton, we will share that substation and pull load off of both those substations. We're looking pretty good in Overton unless there's a big boom in growth, and if that happens, we'll make the contractor that comes in and causes that to pay for a substation. So anyway, we're looking good in Overton. The transmission side of things. So this top row is our 230 coming in, that's 60%. And 60%, we've got a new transformer ordered. Oh, actually, no, we've got that second line. So even at 60%, we've got that second line that's built and it's ready to go, or it's online. And so that 60% will be a lot less now because we have twice the capacity. So we're looking good on our 230 line on that so far. This second line down, that is the line out of Tortoise that comes into Overton and Mesquite. You see where line capacity is 81%. And these numbers are, once again, high summer with ambient temperatures on the wire. That ambient temperature on that wire drops the capacity down on that. So I'm saying the line capacity is 143 amps or 143 megawatts of capacity on that line in the middle of the summer.
So that 81%, that's of the line capacity or the transformer?
Line capacity, yeah. So we've got that second line that's being built. That should take us down to where we're good, back in within good tolerance. The other is a transformer. We're at 60% on that transformer. That other transformer is coming. It'll be here mid-2026.
So those are all the ones that got bumped forward, like they're coming quicker than we...
Yeah, we expected them to be 3 years out, and they ended up being a year.
So probably
good. Over a year. So, yeah, it's probably good that they are. But did you have a question, Mike?
No.
Oh, okay. This right here, this 102%, we have a 60 MVA transformer at Tortoise, and we're just waiting for that work to be completed to get that online. That's actually not ours. That's Lincoln County. That's Lincoln County's load, but that will help them and us both to get that 60 MVA transformer online. So, and then that Sand Hills 138, that's also the new line. We'll fix that 61%. But there's also this one right here, this 55% on that 69T5. That is feeding Overton and Logandale. That's off of that one breaker. Down the road, we might eventually have to split that two substations up between two breakers instead of a single breaker. So, but other than that, our transmission system is looking good, and we've got a plan in place to take care of what's not. So I just wanted to present that to you guys and let you know that I feel like we're doing pretty good and we're going in the right direction. So, and then we had, and Melissa's going to talk about that, we had a study done by ECI, a load flow study that actually verified what I had in these spreadsheets saying that what we needed to do. So anyway, I wanted to present that to you, but I've also got some pictures too, if you want to bring that up, Stephen. Is there any questions on that? We've been pretty busy. We've got so much going on that it's just crazy. My guys are just knocking some stuff out and stuff that you guys wouldn't even see or know that's happening because it's all inside of a building or inside of a substation where you don't see it. But years ago, and it's been like 15 plus years ago, maybe even 20 years ago, this is toward a substation building, and it had wireways in the ceiling. And we cut the floor, because it was putting new panels in, we cut the floor, ran all the cables in the floor up to the new panels, tore all the wire, the racking out of the overhead racking out. Well, because of all the expansion and everything we've done to that sub, our floor trays are full. And so now we have to put back in the ceiling trays in order to make more room for more cables, because we've got, I think we got four more panels going in here, plus AC and DC for all of them. So it's pretty congested. So the sub-ops crew's been putting that back in, the ladder racks. They've also been out at Tortoise. This is the metering CTPT that exploded. It might have been 6 months ago or better. We finally got those and put them back in place, and they've tested them, and they are ready to go back into service. So
is that what you sent back to the manufacturer or something?
Mm-hmm. It exploded for who knows why.
What did they figure?
They figured that the connection on the inside was just loose enough. It wasn't torqued to the right spec, and it had a little bit of resistance in there, and once it opened up just enough to create a spark, it exploded the whole thing. So that's what they figured. It was just wasn't torqued to the right spec. So it's they've been doing testing and commissioning on those, and they're ready to go back in service.
So did they, was that any cost to us, the new one?
They replaced it free of cost. And it's been kind of interesting. You talk to Shane, and Shane and his group have been doing this testing. And there's so much induction off that 230 line that they've had a hard time testing that because it goes into the machine, the induction of that 230 line. So they've had quite an experience testing all that with that energized 230 next to it. So this is a picture of Long Drive Substation. The contractors have been pulling cable and terminating cable. You see on the right-hand side where they've terminated some cables, and there's still some to be terminated, and then the cables laying on the ground ready to be stripped out and terminated there. The sub crew has also been working in there. There's some added designs that the engineers, when they started doing the relay settings, they says, well, we need to do this. And so they said, well, what do you want to do? And we said, well, let's add it in. So the sub crew's been in there rewiring some of this stuff because there was, once the settings started coming on, they said, well, yeah, we need to do this. So cable tray and breakers are installed. They're wiring up the breakers currently. They should be done by the end of the week with the breakers, and that's just in time for the towers to come for Raptor, and they'll move back over to Raptor and start putting towers together. The picture on the right is there's a big dead end structure just to the west of Long Drive that they had to cut in, and this is them cutting that dead-end structure. It's just outside of the fence at Long Drive.
Now that the towers have come in, has the neighbors had any other input?
They haven't seen the towers. We're still waiting on these. Okay. This is just the dead-end structure. The substation structures haven't come yet.
Okay.
So we'll see what they say in a few months. We had one comment that says, oh, you're, that's all you're putting in? Because they saw the workaround towers on the shoe fly. They saw the shoe fly. Is that all you're doing? That's not bad, but that's not done. This was a lightning strike out in Bunkerville. It caused quite a bit of damage to that meter. The picture on the left is a meter, and the picture on the right is a meter base that it came out of. Just wanted to kind of throw that in there to show you what kind of destruction meter or lightning can do.
They're still finishing that up, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's Kyle says he's reporting on that next week, and I didn't want to
next month,
and I didn't want to steal any of his thunder, so I'm just going to show you pictures of what the meter base looked like and the meter. Pretty crazy what that lightning can do. So my team and I have been working on tying up loose ends for the estuary solar escape project. This is up towards the dump, and you can probably almost see the dump from there, but not really. It's this little speck. That's quite a big project. I don't know if you ever driven out there or not. I got to go on a tour with all of it, and I was amazed. Once you get up on top and drop the other side, there's twice as many panels as are on this side. You just don't see them. It's a huge project. But there's a lot of work to do the billing. Tenasca and NV Energy needs a lot of inputs from us. They've been asking for a tie between our SCADA system and their SCADA system so they can see the path from generation all the way to their system and make sure those breakers are closed and give numbers back so that they can track all that for their forecasting and their balancing. Tenasca Power needed meter reads so that they can bill us for, you know, everything. Anyway, we've had, so the substation SCADA and IT from Overton Power have been working with Tenasca Estuary NV Energy CompuNet, Lincoln County Power, and a few other third-party entities to get this online. There's been a lot of moving parts on this project, but when I was up there, the panels up on the top and then the ones down below, they said, those are your panels. Now it goes over the top of that hill. He says, that's the best because you get it when it's in the morning and you get it in the evening. You get generation in the morning. That's the best. So we gave you guys the best spot on the whole hill. For your
I'm generation. Sure they did. I'm certain those are ours.
Amazing. Good job, Alicia.
Yeah.
You saw it right through that one.
Yeah.
So anyway, on the 9th, they started doing testing. And what they did for their testing is they turned on each, there's three different off-takers, and each off-taker has their own meter. So they ramped up those to see if everything's working on each of those three. And they did that testing on the 9th, and then on the 11th, I didn't put that on there, did I? 10th? I didn't put that date on there, but I think it was the 10th. They wanted to generate 70 megawatts for 3 days to make sure that their loads were correct, their output was correct. And so they fired it up and they haven't turned it off. They've been generating 70 megawatts ever since then. So
so they've been feeding into our system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's my report unless you have questions.
So when we had like some problems, I've heard about some people had stuff, had trouble, had a lot of internet problems and stuff. And somebody told me that was associated with when they were firing that solar station up. Anybody, do you guys know anything about any of that?
I can't imagine how that would have an effect on the internet.
Well, there was some spikes came down. We had some stuff in our, like some of our stuff tripped.
So we did have one bump that happened when they initially hotted up their transformer. That was on one morning, and it was a millisecond, but it was enough that it did register a bump, and the power was right back on. We haven't received any complaints from customers, with the exception of one industrial customer that we've had.
I just knew that a lot of people didn't have internet one morning.
Were they posting it on Facebook?
Some, Well, I was one of them. Oh, okay. And I did eat most on paper. Anyway, that's what I heard, is that it knocked out something in the, one of their internet router thingies.
I actually talked to Reliance because we had one of their power surge boxes, and that's what they were referring to, is okay. Those devices, the inverter went. They were just old devices, and we've had that a couple times where the inverter is just old, and finally, last bump, finally did it.
Yeah, they have a big transformer up there that jumps. It's a step-up transformer, and every time they turn that thing on, it hits us pretty hard. It drops our voltage.
So is that
split?
But we've been in communication with them and Lincoln County, because Lincoln County is their connection to the grid, so that we ensure, first off, that we have communication if that's ever going to happen again, and second of all, so that we have input on the time of when that, now it's on. So they would have to notify us.
It's not like something's going to happen every day.
No, that was just for the startup of their, yeah.
And after that first big bump, we made them start that thing at 5 in the morning when our loads were really low and we didn't have, you know, a lot of industrial customers online. So
if they had to do that again, is there...
we would have protocols. Well, we would have protocols in place that would, and we would set the time. Mm-hmm. So that we monitor when our loads would be the least affected, and then we would just require that communication.
Can they stage it up too differently, or it's pretty much going to be?
Nope, it's on or off. That's it.
When it's a transformer.
Okay. Yeah. Big transformer.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, Scott with admin.
So Bob was complaining on Facebook. Let's talk about that. All right, this is the quarterly report. This is the one I do every quarter. This is June. I'm going to talk a little bit more than just the cybersecurity stuff, but we'll start out with cybersecurity training. We're at 96% for the month of May. We had some really good training. Be cautious with social media sharing. Very suspicious communications. Verify suspicious communications. And monitor for insider threats. And I'm thinking about doing away with the percentage and just doing how Kyle reports it, just the number of people. That way you don't know really how many attended or not. I like that. But that's 96%, so I think we missed one person.
Those suspicious ones, are those I got texts, like I didn't pay my power bill, but there was another one.
That you drove on a toll road?
Yeah.
Or you have an open ticket.
Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what this is. This is the phishing, the internal phishing testing that we do. And I talked to you about last month how we did get two people clicking on our phishing emails. And so that shows right there for the month of May. We had 35,000 email, 3,200 of those were spam for the month of May. There's the firewall blocks by country. Server system uptime remains at 100%. Our data backup and restoration has been tested. We're at 100% all the way across the board. The EISAC we're continually monitoring that. 75 emails in May. What are the top three security threat patterns that we saw in those emails? Physical, cyber, and some insider and impersonation threats. Which was interesting. I hadn't seen those in any of those emails before. So impersonation attempts to compromise accounts and systems, suspicious insider activities, including remote IT worker fraud. That was in a number of different emails that different utilities were reporting on. And then we'll jump into customer service. New automatic bill pays. We had 81 sign up in March. 76 in April and 48 in May. So that trend is rising.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Back to the, you have two sets of bars there.
Yeah.
And I see you're drawing the line on the, based on one set.
The 2025 year, this year.
Okay, so many numbers, I missed that part over there on the right.
Yeah. I was so attracted to the left side.
Look around. Do I have it spread out too far?
No, that's okay. Okay. Just give us another couple seconds. Yeah. Couple seconds, yeah. Okay. So,
yeah.
All right. These are additional people you're signing up.
Yep, these are brand new automatic bill pay sign-ups.
So the 24 was what they signed up last year.
Yep, I do year-over-year comparisons.
Of sign-ups, but that's not
sign-ups
necessarily on the system. But
total, we're going to go to the next slide for.
Ah, all right.
So that's rising as well.
Ah.
And we have 10,462 customers that have signed up for automatic bill pay. And over there is the percentage of our customer base.
Neither will.
Yeah, you have to
Okay.
So 55.65% of our customer base are signed up for this service. All right, these are new customers on e-bill. So that was bill pay, now we're on e-bill. We don't have as many signing up for this, but the blue is 2025. So in March we had 88, 76, and 71. And so we are kind of declining on those. But here's our total. For 2025, we have almost 6,400 members signed up for e-bill.
Of course, as you get them signed up, the remainder are much more resistant.
Yeah.
I mean, 50% like it. Something, yeah. But the ones who don't sign up probably may never sign up.
May never, and a lot of these are brand new customers that are signing onto the system that we try to get right at the get right out of the gate. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Total number of calls. This is between both valleys, and that is declining. This darker color here is 2025. 1,319, 1,311, 69 in May. So the number is coming down. From 2024, we're down quite a bit on the number of total calls into the system, into our customer service reps. This is our average on-hold wait time. We're averaging 7 seconds before the phone is picked up and answered. And I don't know if you noticed, but this 7 and this 7 are different. And I meant to go back and fix that slide, but I forgot. Did you catch that, Mike?
I just was going to ask you.
I knew you were. I wanted to hit it early. Did you catch that? There's a little variance there. And I don't know why that was, but I'm going to fix it.
6.25.
Yeah, I'll fix it next time. And now we have average talk time. This is in seconds. Over here I have it laid out in minutes. Average talk time is also going down, but we're still at the 2.5 minute mark. A little bit below that on average for the month of May.
Now, when you have somebody calls in, obviously someone is talking to them.
Yeah.
But if you get the time down far enough, you could have less people talking, right? Is that the idea? Yeah.
The idea is we're just tracking whenever we hire new customer service reps, we see this trend go up. They spend a little bit more time with the customer.
As they're training.
They're training, they're learning, they're asking more questions. It's a good thing to see this go down. Both sides kind of know what's going on. Total walk-in customers, this is also combined for both valleys. Dark blue is 2025. And we're seeing that trend go a little bit up. So 2023 in March, 2150 in April, and 2286 in May. So year over year, I mean, we're a little bit higher than we were last year at this time.
You have more customers, right?
Yeah. But you would think that with all of our services, we would have more people signing up for our services and less people coming into the office, and we're not seeing that. So what does that tell you?
Customer service is popular.
They like to visit our customer service reps. They love us.
Get and ask your people.
They will.
Mike, no, that is not the answer.
Is that the answer,
no, the answer is to be okay with it. Some people like to do stuff online, and some like to do it in person.
To so be okay with it.
Yes, okay. We want to offer both options.
Well, I like your idea, though.
Just nasty your people.
Yeah. Less people in the office.
Next slide.
I wanted to sit here. Because that's in our minutes. Let's go to public relations. Let's go to our website statistics. This is for our OPD5.com. We saw, and this just rounds it up, so you don't see a whole lot of variation, but we saw 4,000 active users in the month of May, 3,700 in April. And so there's not a whole lot of variation. I'm not sure why that is, but... And this is the amount of time that they're spending on the website on average, 35 seconds. Not a whole lot of time.
Looking for one thing?
I think they're getting on the website and possibly going to the portal. We're getting on the website looking for that bit of information. Yeah. So now let's jump into Instagram. Instagram isn't the big one, but we are trying to build it. And so this is new Instagram followers. It's the darker color. It's 25,373. And that gives us a total Instagram followers of 549, and our reach, the amount of people that saw what we posted, it's really close to the same. It's 268 for the month of May. Facebook is the big one. So the number of Facebook posts, we had 10 Facebook posts in March, 15 in April, 22 in May.
What are they basically posting about?
I'll show you that. I have a slide for you on that one. I'll be out of you.
This guy got it together.
Yeah, Christy does a great job managing all of our social medias. Vernon does a great job at managing content, creating content for these posts. So,
creative people.
Creative. Okay, new Facebook. New Facebook followers. The dark is this year. We got 14 in May. And that gives us, let's talk about reach. I should have put the other slide first. So in March, we were able to reach 3,117, 3,633, and then we had a big reach there of 10,162 people in May. And that kind of coincides with the number of posts that we did. There was 22 posts in the month of May as well.
And I think the quality of the posts, right?
Like
we're not just writing about outages anymore. We have good quality content that's being reshared.
And it's well-rounded, a lot of different types of content.
Yeah.
So here's our followers. We're at 4,406 at the end of May. And here is just a tidbit of some of those postings.
Yes.
Delayed openings, energy scams, our outage postings, our newsletter postings, and then that was a posting that I believe led back to our website article.
Can I point something out
Absolutely.
On here? If you see on the left-hand side, the delayed opening, one of the things that I talked with Christy and her staff about doing is ensuring that the public knows that the reason that our staff, that our office is closed for an hour, or now that we're coming to Overton, for an hour and a half is for safety meeting. We're requiring our employees to attend safety meeting. That's a top priority for us, and we want the public to know that that's a top priority for us, because the safer we are, the safer we make it for our public. And so that's something that we're putting front and center. You see that I there on the right, we went and visited at the Chamber of Commerce, and I talked with them about all of the infrastructure that we have in place, but I let them know that number one priority for us is safety, that's our number one priority for our staff, but also for the public, and so we are trying to make that front and center for everybody.
And that's my presentation.
No, it was the kind of thing that has some public interest, but I like the idea that you're going to have the office closed. Your sign telling people why it's closed.
Absolutely.
Safety meeting really makes them go, oh, that's good, as opposed to when they had garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't say that no one has ever said, oh, you were late today, but then when our staff relays to them that we have a required safety meeting once a month for 1 hour, they don't get any kickback from that.
Right.
The public is very supportive. Okay, next up we're going to go to Jonathan for the financials.
All righty. Beginning with our statement of operations for May, line one to the far right, we're going to focus on the far right column there, the column B. So we had $3.8 million in operating revenue brought in for May, Our line three cost of purchase power was just over $3 million alone. Our line 20 total cost of electric service was $4.3 million. Our line 22 interest received on investments, $54,000. And then we're reporting a line 29 net loss of $402,000 for May. So where the majority of this loss comes from, so and basically the two culprits are here, the operating revenue and cost of purchase power. So in May, we generated and sold a lot more energy than we did in April. However, our revenue, our recognized revenues were basically the same, just a little bit more in May than in April.
How we bought more and sold more should be proportional up, shouldn't it?
Yeah, so the difference is we have to buy our power from the beginning of the month to the end of the month, so May 1st to May 31st. So our power costs were higher, we sold higher, but when we recognize our revenue, it only we recognize from the 15th of the month, from the prior month, to the 15th of this month. So there's always a little bit of a lag. So on the shoulder months, like in May, where we're going into the peak season, we're kind of on the opposite end of that, and so we're actually have to pay more for our power, but we don't recognize that revenue until the following month.
You're not getting paid for the power you just sold, gave to people.
Yeah.
They haven't quite paid for it yet.
Yeah. So the
we'll make it up in October.
Yeah. But on the back end.
That's on the other shoulder month.
Although that's a pretty shocking number.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a loss like that.
Well, we don't like to bring it up, but in January we had a higher loss than $400,000. But
you didn't tell me that.
but yeah, so that's the main culprit there of why our losses is where it's at. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. We've talked about the fact that from January to June is going to be the tightest financial piece that we've had in many, many years at OPD5.
And it is.
And we're seeing that. And those numbers are a little bit shocking. They're not shocking to us because we've prepared ourselves emotionally for this, but we prepared ourselves emotionally to present it to you today, too. So I don't want you to think that we're not monitoring this and we're not aware of this, because we absolutely are, but this was a part of our expectation that 2025 was going to be a transition for us with our power cost and the reduction of our margins, in addition to that solar PPA not happening until July.
Although I see we paid them something. Wasn't there a check written to them for some power? No?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
No. And then the other thing, I'm sorry, Randy, the other thing is those power costs are estimates. So that's not been solidified yet. Those were Jonathan's estimates of what he anticipated our bills for May to be. So there's going to be fluctuation in that. Our revenue is what our revenue is, but our power cost could fluctuate. It could go up or down. But right now we're believing that our power cost is going to go down a little bit, but not $400,000.
Yeah. Well, we also talked that we had to re-examine the rates after we get a handle on, right?
Yes. Yes.
It looks much, I mean, when we were seeing $1 million positive, mm-hmm. Now we're seeing $500,000 neg.
But yes. We'll see, with the solar contract coming in, we're going to see much better revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see the same revenue, but lower power cost.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I know we talked about on the last increase we had last year. I know you talked about October, November, trying to gauge the solar coming in, the projection. At what point do you start talking about whether or not an increase happens?
In November.
So that's October, November.
Yep.
After we see what the final difference.
Yes, we'll see how we make it through the summer, and then we'll start anticipating that. And we had, now I can't think of the name of the study that they just did, a revenue requirement study done by CFC.
Yeah.
They came through and redid that for us. based on if solar did not come on. If it did not come on, what would be required? And at that time, they said in 2026, you would require a 6% increase with no solar. Because we couldn't anticipate what solar is going to be. That was our worst case scenario. And so we're happy to report that solar is flowing through our system. And so we'll see when those bills come through.
Months, kind of where we're
yep.
at.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? This our year to date, it was a lot favorable last month. Again, our year to date margin is 60,000.
That's not average per month. That's our total margin.
Yeah,
total.
January to May. Yeah.
Okay.
And so we're projecting our budget was around 900. And I mean, here, like we've discussed, this looks like a lot, quite a bit of difference. But I'm pretty optimistic that for the end of the year, we're projecting. Well, at the beginning of the year, we did 5.7 million is where we're budgeted to, or what we're projecting to make in revenues. And I'm pretty optimistic that our margins are going to be, I don't know where, but right around 5 or a little bit over 5.
For the whole year?
For the whole
25,
year. 25,
right?
Yeah, for 2025.
That's
pretty.
That's about half of what they were for the year before, and then there's something
we were 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just under 12 and 24.
And I'm not trying to defend the person who did the budget, but I'll say, when you look at that, we anticipated at this time that we would have a $900,000 budget and we have a $60,000 budget. That is a drastic difference. But when you look at that what that is on a percentage of a $20 million budget, we are not wildly out of line for what we thought the budget would be. I'm glad that Jonathan is optimistic. I tend to be a bit more of a catastrophist than him, and so we're balancing each other out. I do still believe, though, that with the solar coming on, we're going to see far better margins.
Yeah.
And like Lisa said, with these estimates, we're Tenasca is an estimate, NV Energy, the transmission costs are an estimate, and we actually received I came up with an estimate, and then to be able to submit these financials, and then Tenasca provided their estimate before their final, after I posted these, and it's a reduction of around 70,000, so so that's favorable.
Lisa, are you going to talk more about solar coming on, what's happening?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Turn this off.
Yeah, and turn it back all the way so
you can go ahead and advance. So with our balance sheet, on the asset side, we'll, right here, line 5, our net utility plant, $152,963,000. Our line 8 investment and associated organizations, and our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 inventory, brings us to our total asset value on line 29 of $185,387,000. On our liability and equity side, our line 36 total equities is just over $127 million, and then our line 40 long-term debt, line 48 accounts payable, and then our total liabilities and equities on line 57 of, again, $185,387,000. So this is just a little bit lower than our December 24 balance sheet. Essentially, we've moved our investments into our plant, and then since we've had to depreciate our plant assets, that depreciation is a little more than just the straight value of the investments. So we closed at around 186 and change for December, and we're at 185. So see a difference between the net or the total asset value. That's where it comes in.
Jonathan, when I look at that, it's a tremendous amount of information, much of it pretty important. But to the board, we may be able to get by with a little simpler thing. So you might look at that and see if, I know we need to have it and have our report, but showing us, I mean, like, we were real interested in how much money we're making each month compared.
Right.
And a few other things are real important. Some things don't change much.
Right.
And they do, like you just pointed out, that the total assets are lower, but we can't know that unless you tell us.
Right.
You know, so maybe you can look at some of the numbers and see if there's a different way to display them, or much like the yellow is the things that we would like to look at, I think.
Highlight.
And this is that report, though, that they have to do this for somebody, right?
Well, because it would be incomplete financial statements that we would be posting if we didn't do it. I see where you're going with this, though. Then pick out a number and give us a graph to show us what does it mean instead of just giving us the loan
total. Something like that, because I know you have to do this kind of stuff for financial integrity, I guess is what you say. But for us, you know, there's only a few things, I'm sorry, only a few things we're real interested in this particular thing are important to us. And, of course, you'll call out things like the change in total asset value when they come up, but most of the time they don't change.
So that's a good point. What you're asking is continue to show the statements, but then show some graphical.
Maybe the next slide afterwards says, okay, here's the bottom line for you guys, or for us.
Okay,
that's all. That's no big deal. It's just I think it'd be easier for us at least.
Yeah. Okay, I did move up our financial metrics. We reported these a little bit different, or farther in the presentation. And I guess I didn't get my new one in here. And I had some graphs in it, but I guess they didn't get up in time. I thought I had
them. You guys are all thinking
ahead. On the drive.
You might have helped him on that. You
double check.
Does it not want to open?
That might.
Pretty sure that's one of the. I think
that's the one that's.
So,
Well, you look good there.
Okay.
I'm not sure. All right, no graphs this time. Don't come next time. But I did move these ratios up earlier in the presentation. Our modified debt service coverage is 1.73, and that's with estimates through the end of the year. Our goal that we've been set in strategic planning is 1.85. I'm optimistic that we're going to reach that by the end of the year. Obviously, this is with estimates, but I'm pretty sure it's looking like we're going to reach that. Equity is a percentage of assets. So essentially, that's our margins. Our equity divided by the total asset value, and where it's almost 69%. Our goal is set in strategic planning, 57%. What that means is we have the ability to loan more, to pull more loans. And if we actually brought this down to 57%, like tomorrow, that would mean borrowing $40 million, and it would be at that goal at 57%. So just to give you an idea. times interest earned ratio, that's basically just the interest expense. This is a year-to-date number, 1.09, so we're just barely, because our margins are low from January to now, it's really low. But if we did if we looked at the estimate through the end of the year, it's not on here. Our goal is 4, but through the end of the year, it's right around 4.2%. So. Or not a percent, but 4.2. So breakdown of our cash and checking accounts. So we close at $3,956,000, and then our investments in our Morton account is valued at $12.4 million, and our Goldman Sachs account at $641,000. And our year-to-date interest slash dividends are on the right side of each of those accounts.
Spent a lot of money. We were at $27 million.
Yes, sir.
Just a couple of months ago on that.
Yep.
Now we're at 12.
And that all went straight into plant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've been spending lots. The breakdown of our securities in our Morton account by security type in the pie chart, and then by security duration in the bar graph. Number of customers, as of May 31st, we have 18,878. As you can see, we have 21 less than we did the prior month, and it's actually coincidentally the same amount that we had in March. That's a net number, active customers, active meters. They usually, when it's low, the next month goes quite a bit higher, like you saw in January compared to February.
Yeah, but still.
But continued growth still from December to May. Connection fees, we received 42 total connection fees valued at $38,769. And then our current billing arrangements, we have we have 44 residential customers with a value of $6,122, and then one commercial customer at $515. And then our roundup program balances continue to grow there. And
okay, the revenue, the 30 people for 6,000 total, right?
Yes, for April. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's $200, right? 200 each.
Yeah, roughly.
That's not bad.
It could be.
Well,
it could vary
like
too. Yeah.
Around $200.
So what you see is that in May we have very comparable to the same dollar amount, but we had 14 more people who needed a bit more time. We'll see that in June, July, and August that will grow, mm-hmm. and then it will taper off in the other shoulder months, and then it will come back on during the holidays.
You mean sort of a curve?
Yes. Yeah. But that's a number that I am really proud of, because that is 44 people that we were able to work with to ensure that they did not get disconnected.
That's right. No, I mean, yeah. That's great.
And this is the detail of our loans with CFC. Our next payment is due at the end of this month on the 30th for $1.484 million. We're scheduled to make that on time and be paid in full. And then our total outstanding loans with CFC is just over $45 million. Mm-hmm. And this is the breakdown of our revenue by customer class. Each class on the left and then on the right is the average average kilowatt. Cents per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
This is good information for you guys when people are asking you what are our rates, especially when we have tiered rates. It's hard for you to remember when you go to conferences or other training where you're talking with other board members. But when you're dealing with the people that you represent, you can tell them that for a commercial customer, the average rate right there is showing 11 cents, but that includes their demand. And so that's not what their energy charge is. And if you compare us, even let's say for residential at 12 cents, if you compare us across the state and then certainly across the nation, we still have incredibly good rates, and we just had a very sizable rate increase. And so that's one of the reasons why I want Jonathan to give you this information, because this is something that you will get asked about as a board member, and we want you to have easy access to that, that the average rate per kWh for our residential customers is at 12 cents. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not every customer because some people use less, but that's the average, and so that's good info.
That's the one you actually answer almost all the time.
Yes, it's either that or your industrial customer.
How much is city paying? Or
yeah, yeah.
With the residential rate.
Yes.
Yeah. And then this is the summary of those. And this actually kind of goes in, gives us a little more insight of the May, our May costs. So this is our total revenue received in May. As you can see, compared to April, it's a little bit more, but our actual power costs.
8 million more.
Was, close to 8 million more.
Well, that's the KWH purchased. The energy cost is down on line 17, so it's $800,000 more.
Oh, yeah, dollars. Sorry, that. This is kilowatt hours.
And that's how much dollars. Energy we bought, how much more energy we bought. But then you see on line 17, the cost of the power, it was $2.2 million last month, and in May it was $3 million. So there's $800,000 difference with not that much difference in revenue.
Yeah. So we purchased 39 million kilowatt hours, 30 megawatts of solar. What are we projecting that in kilowatt hours for the month? Have we kind of looked at that number, what that would be?
Oh, it's been a while since I've looked at that, Rich. I'll tell you in August.
We're probably somewhere in the 7 to 8 million.
7 to 8 million what?
Kilowatt hours of the solar.
Oh, the supply.
Maybe less than that. Maybe 5. Maybe 5. But every kilowatt hour we make 5 more cents on than we do. So we look at that, we can see about what we're going to make.
Oh, I see what you mean. Because if we're buying
from
39
million last month,
and then it'll drop by 5.
5, and we buy it from on the solar, we make 5 cents.
The other thing that
we're making on the other.
The other thing that you can look at there that Jonathan has pointed out is our monthly cost. So let's just look at May. That's penciling out right now to be $76.90 a megawatt hour. Our contract that we signed with Tenaska is at $87.70 for that megawatt hour. And then we have hydro that we're buying, some around $20, some around $30 a megawatt hour. And then, of course, the solar is going to come in at just under $35 a megawatt hour. So starting in July, because that's when our PPAs, we'll see that average monthly cost drop quite a bit too.
So are we at $79? We're lower than the Tenaska contract now
because of hydro. Because of hydro.
And then we'll go down again.
Correct.
Because of solar.
Correct.
And you're saying that's at 35?
Yes, it's 34.70 is what the solar is. And market is at 87.70.
And with the hydro, when we do more power, it will go down, but and with the solar, but if you compare, I mean, like this month right here, we went up from April to May because we do have the hydro, but since we had to purchase, you know, that much more, the hydro is getting watered down, so it's
working. That's the truth. It's a good pun, but it's the truth.
The humor.
Yeah. We got a bunch of comedians tonight.
With all this laughing, it's a good thing there's no public.
Yeah. But then our average cost is continuing to go down. Started really high in January, and that's not displayed on here, but that's included. That's a year-to-date average cost. So at 7.8.
Sure hope that solar pays off.
Yes, and the other thing is that Jonathan is reporting too is that we're in our highest hydro months as well. Our hydro we're going to see deplete over the summer as well. So
yeah. And that's all I have for my presentation. Unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm going to have to up my jokes game. I feel like I came ill prepared.
He's waiting all night to see this.
Oh, man. New title slides, huh?
Wow. I just wanted to go over with you guys. It won't advance for me, Stephen, if you could just move the slide, please. These are some of the meetings that I attended this month, and I'm not going to go over all of those meetings with you, but there are some highlights from those meetings that I want to discuss with you. First and foremost is that Escape Solar has started their generation. That I worked a lot with Tenasca. Tenasca is our energy scheduler and manager, but they are also the energy manager for Escape Solar. They've taken on that project. So there
is
are.
Is that good? Like,
yes. That has worked to be very beneficial for OPD5. So I've talked with them on many occasions about how to handle the test power that's coming from the solar generation. That solar generation, as they ramp up, of course, they're ramping up at a time when the market is already has a glut of solar. And so what does that mean for us? I was very clear with both them and Escape Solar that we would not take one kWh from the Escape project if it was not of financial benefit to our customers. So we went back and forth with Escape Solar on what they were going to do with that test energy. When the energy did come on, they were under requirements with their contractor that they had to bring on all 70 megawatts and it had to run for three consecutive days. That's a part of their testing, and that's just good utility practice. We expect that they're going to work out all of those kinks. So in those negotiations, as we went back and forth with both Tenasca and Escape, Escape Solar then offered OPD5 all 70 of those megawatts for 5 days for free. So we got those 70 megawatts for free. I, again, was in talks with Tenasca to ensure that that would not be of any financial hit to us with our bandwidth charges or any of the issues that we would have there. Tenasca agreed to help us market that energy. And then starting on Monday of this week, Escape then did sold us 50 megawatts of those 70, 50 megawatts every day until our PPA starts, and we will be buying each one of those megawatts at $12 a megawatt. The other remaining 20 will go to one of their off-takers in Las Vegas, and so we will also be charging them the system use fee began on Monday for using our system to move those 20 megawatts across to the Tortoise substation, which is their point of delivery to the grid.
So Tenasca has agreed?
So Tenasca has agreed to ensure that was not that there was not financial risk to Overton Power by doing that. So not only they said that they would market and ensure that we were not only made whole, but that we would make a profit from the purchase of those at $12. And it, again, it's only for those 13 days. But and so we did agree to that. The other thing that we were in contact with Escape when we initially were in discussions with how their project was going to go, they thought that they would put on the first 70 megawatts that would be solar, and then they would work to build in the battery storage that they added after. They actually have built out all of that infrastructure. So the battery storage will start in July. That will slowly ramp up, and it should be completed by September. The good thing for us in that is, first off, their agreement is they cannot deploy their batteries while their solar is generating. So there is no there's no concern of them overloading our system by putting all of their battery, deploying their batteries and what their solar is. They are, again, connected to Lincoln County, and Lincoln County is responsible for ensuring that that doesn't happen. And I had a good visit with their general manager and ensured that that happened when we went to Wells. The other thing that that does for us is that that creates that much more that they're using across our system sooner, and so we will be recognizing that system use fee sooner than what we had originally anticipated. So the battery storage is interesting. It's 115 megawatts of solar with 400 megawatts of battery storage, but the batteries are deployed in 100 megawatt increments over 4 hours. So after their solar goes off, then they deploy their batteries, and it's 100 megawatts at a time for 4 hours. And all of that is going to one off-taker in Las Vegas.
So we don't...
We're not getting any
of that. No. No.
Our benefit is only solar.
Yes, our PPA is for 25 megawatts of solar. Now, but the benefit is that they're using our system, and so we will charge them for those transmission fees.
And since it also goes through Nevada Energy's system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our transmission costs are less.
No, I wish that was the case, but no, it doesn't.
They're still going to charge us.
NV Energy is going to get their payment, and then Escape will pay NV Energy to use their system as well. So, yes.
Have to be available to draw.
Yes. Another meeting that I attended, Vernon and I went to Las Vegas, and we met with the County Commissioner, Marilyn Kirkpatrick. We had a very nice visit with her. Most of that meeting was just about relationship building. I've been aware of Marilyn, and I have attended many meetings with her, but I have not personally had a relationship with her. And so thankfully, Vernon has a good relationship with her from his past duties. And so we had a great visit. We talked about some of the goals and aspirations that I have for our service territory and what she can do to help us in doing that, both helping us in building relationships on the federal level. One of the things that we, and also for state and federal grant funding. The other thing that we discussed was that Randall talked to you about the sign that we had to put up for our line road. Marilyn has access and has agreed to help us have that line road removed from Google Maps. We heard many stories. Mendes came and visited with us a few weeks ago now, and he told that he went out on that line road that day, and there were people who were trying to tow camper trailers, there were young people with flat tires, there were families in minivans, there were multiple people stuck, and those people were unsuspecting because Google told them, you can take this road, and it looks like it runs right along the freeway, and so we are going to take her up on that offer and have that line road removed from that route. For public safety, I think that's important. We can't stop locals, we can't stop people from going on it, but we can help the unsuspecting who have never driven that road. Yes, not advertise it. I was going to call you Mendes and then Randall, but it's Vernon. I know who you are. Vernon and I also met with Congressman Horsford's office. We had a great talk with his staff, and in fact, his rural liaison for the state is going to come and do an on-site tour with us in July, and we are going to visit with him some more. We would like to host the congressman to come and take a tour with us sometime in the third quarter of this year, and so he wants to come and visit our site, get to know us a little bit better, and then we'll help facilitate that relationship with the congressman. I have some ideas that we've talked with his staff about that I would like for Overton Power to ask for some appropriations in 2027 to help with some projects that I have in mind. And so we will work to build that relationship with Congressman Horsford to see if he can't help facilitate those appropriations. The last thing that came from the Congressman's office is that they agreed to reach out to the Bureau of Land Management about the small portion of right-of-way that is still being held up for our transmission line. And so Randall has put together all of that information, and we've sent it over to them. They said that we should give them 3 to 4 weeks for a response, but I'm hoping that with a little nudge from somebody with that kind of power that we can see it move through the BLM.
Is that held up with BLM or from the pipeline?
It's being held up in the NEPA process. So they're writing the agreement, the right-of-way offer to us, but their NEPA portion review people haven't reviewed it.
If you could advance for me, please, Stephen. One of the things that Mendes talked with you guys a lot about was the Glen Canyon slough, the 12 miles that the slough, they had a lot of non-native fish, being bass, moving up through because the waters were warm. And if, as Mendes indicated, if they'd have given him a shovel in an hour and a half, he could have had water moving. Anyway, the Bureau of Reclamation, as part of this, has finally dug out and reshaped an area of the slough. And I thought that you guys would find this interesting. If you look at the graph, that is the temperature since that has been done. So if you look at the April 2025 is smack in the middle of that graph. And if you look at the temperature drop since that's happened, just how quickly in May that water temperature has dropped, just simply from digging out that slough and allowing that water to move. It is incredible to me that it took this long and this many meetings and that much, I don't know what to call it except for bullcrap, honestly, to finally get some water moving in the river and see some temperatures drop. So anyway, I wanted to show you guys a picture of the slough and the fact that that water movement has changed the temperature that drastically in one short month.
As I look at that graph, the red is the spawning temperature, which the fish come in and go for, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that was last year. And then the new blue is what it's now?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously below the red
line. The spawning
line,
temperature,
the big
yes.
Red line.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Mendes eloquently called that giving the fish a cold shower, and that's exactly what's happening. So.
No more fun.
Yeah. Okay, if you can go to the next slide. Last month we talked with you guys about the grant application that we are doing through NREA. Jack and I attended an NREA meeting up in Wells, and one of the members that joined us in that office was the Governor's Office of Federal Assistance. So what does the GOFA offer? They are a single point of contact for us. They do grant discovery tools, grant matching program, grant training, full grant life cycle technical assistance, and a monitoring of regulatory changes. I've given all of that information to Vernon. One of the things that I thought was, there's two things that I think are of wonderful value to us. First off, every month they have a 1 hour long call that we can join that just gives an idea of what grants are out there, what could we use. People have 1 hour to ask questions, and so and that's free of charge. The other thing that they have is, of course, that we're hoping to take advantage of is the grant matching program. And so with that grant, that application required that we match 48% of what we applied for. GOFA then says we can give you 50% of your 48% match. So we have submitted that application to them. On the left is something that Vernon and Brett from our engineering department put together to just give them an idea of what is this project. And they did such a great job that I wanted to just show it to you guys because it really makes it so much more sense on why this project needs to be done. It says these photos were taken on June 11th in 2025, depict just a few different OPD5 right-of-way locations in the Warm Springs area affected by undergrowth. The heavy vegetation growing within the right-of-way illustrates the wildfire risk in this area. It should be noted that OPD5 hired contractors to completely clear vegetation of this area as recently as May of 2024. The vegetation shown here has grown up just that much in this time. And so then what is the resolution? The resolution is for us to move those lines out of those highly affected areas over closer to the road where we would get that out of there. If you could move to the next slide. This is the other piece that he gave that I feel like just drives that point home. This is the Warm Springs fire, and it is right there at those where he showed the pictures of where those lines are that we would be moved and the infrastructure that we had. One key point for this is all culinary water for the Moapa Valley is shut off from pumping if our infrastructure is destroyed by fire. So this isn't just to save our infrastructure, it is for the betterment of our communities. And so I feel really proud about this project, and I'm hoping that we will get all of the funds and the grant. So the matching funds will be awarded in early July, and then the application to the Governor's Office of Energy for that grant are due by July 30th. It is interesting to note that originally that grant application was due at the end of June, but they knew that we were going for the matching funds, and they moved the grant application back to July 30th, so that if we don't get all matching funds that we had hoped, we have time to resubmit our budget before we submit our grant applications. So that is a very good sign. For that grant application and for that submittal, Vernon has submitted letters of support, and I thought that this was very important too. We received letters of support for our portion of this grant from the U.S. Department of Interior for Fish and Wildlife. Commissioner Kirkpatrick wrote a letter of support. Moapa Band of Paiutes, the Moapa Valley Chamber of Commerce, the Moapa Valley Fire District, Moapa Valley Water District, Southern Nevada Water Authority, and Moapa resident. And her little note that she wrote, she wrote us a very nice note, and we included it in that. She lives right in this area. She was thankful that we were clearing the vegetation, and I think that speaks a lot to the Governor's Office of Energy. This isn't just us. Our customers are concerned about this vegetation clearing, and so we included that, and her little note was absolutely adorable. Okay, next slide, please.
That whole application, it's incredible.
It's incredible.
Didn't do anything like that before, and you look at those pictures and the grant submission, that can bring a lot of revenue and help us out a lot and help our customers out, keep the rates low.
The other thing that I want to point out is that when we found out about the governor's, the Office of Financial Assistance, Lisa, our new executive director from NREA, she came up with that. She knew of that office. She reached out to them. She created that relationship, and she found that for us. But the other thing is that Vernon and Randall and his staff had 14-day turnaround time for us to get that submitted to them, and we were 2 days early. So that was an incredible amount of work that they did in the short. Yes.
You guys are doing great. That's really good stuff.
If you could go to the next slide, please, Stephen.
It's the same one as
I know.
Before.
I wanted it there.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
I just had a few more meetings that I attended. Another thing that I have been working with Tenasca on, you guys know that we have been privy to receiving Parker Davis layoff from other entities who are not taking all of their hydro from Parker Davis, and so we have benefited from that. But one of the things with Parker Davis is that contract is for a set amount. So with a Hoover contract, Hoover is based on hydrology. What water goes through Hoover Dam is produced, we get it. If hydrology isn't flowing, we don't get any more. But with Parker Davis, they have the obligation to provide that much energy that we've been allotted to us. So what happens is when hydrology doesn't meet that, they go out on the market and they fill that gap. So a number of customers have negotiated back and forth and said, we don't want you to do that for us anymore. So Colorado River Commission has worked with WAPA, and they sent us out an offer that said, if you do not want the WAPA to go onto the market and match those funds, match that energy requirement for you, you can opt out of that. So Tenasca then looked at that. A couple of things that I thought were interesting. The rate for July was $104 a megawatt hour. The rate for August was $98 a megawatt hour. We have to swallow hard when we say $87.70 that we're paying, but when you see what the market rate is that they're going out and securing, $87.70 isn't so bad. For September, it was $78, I believe, or $79. So Tenasca reached out to us and said, do you want to lay off your matching that they would do for you? And I said, well, We have two things. With our hydro contracts, we have a minimum and a maximum that we must purchase both on-peak and off-peak. Off-peak and on-peak. I want to ensure that we're not going to have any penalties from Colorado River Commission if we don't take that. And the second thing is, I don't want to buy any more power from you that I don't have to at 8770, and I don't want to put myself into bandwidth. They evaluated it and talked with WAPA, and WAPA said, you can only lay off for July and August if you want. You don't have to lay off for September. And then they looked at the bandwidth and said, you will be right at bandwidth for those 2 months. We'll move your bands. So when I agreed to that, that was very kind of Tenasca to do. And when I've penciled that out, that's a $38,000 savings for that power for those 2 months. So I'm thankful for the relationship that we're building with Tenasca. And I believe that they're probably like you guys. When they hang up the phone, they're like, holy cow, I can't talk to her anymore for a few more days. But they are calling me all the time, and we're in a lot of negotiations with Tenasca, and we are getting a very good rapport with them. They have reached out to me today, and they are flying in from Dallas and asked to have a meeting with me in, I think it's the 16th of July. They want to talk about future growth opportunities in our area. So I've agreed to have that meeting with them.
Who is that?
Tenasca, the staff of Tenasca.
While you're talking about all that, is there, now that, okay, we're seeing solar coming on, did we buy the right amount or contract for the right amount of that, do you think?
For our solar?
Yeah.
Bob, when we
contract for more?
When we did the analysis for that, and we used Morgan Stanley as a backstop to help us, because they did their own analysis to say, what could we take? We couldn't take any more. If you guys remember, originally we only took 20 megawatts. Mm-hmm. And then Escape came back to us and said, if you will take 5 more, we'll give you a dollar off. And we looked at what was our projected load growth. We talked with Morgan Stanley and said, are we going to be over? Because of that minimum that we're required to buy for our hydro, both on and off peak, there are shoulder months where we couldn't take more than 25 megawatts of solar, and then our hydro, that's all we would need. And so I feel like, yes, we're right on that. Now, as we see future growth, especially if it's large, if we have an industrial customer or something like that, then yeah, we probably could take more, but not right now, not right now. The other thing that happens with solar is that it is cheaper, but you pay for the backup for when it's not. That's baked into that 8770 rate, is that they have to have anything that they can fill any time that solar is not functioning.
I don't know how that, like Vegas has taken this battery power. Did we look at getting some battery power too?
No.
Is that something we would want to consider? Or?
Maybe from a different project, not from this project. We will think about that in the future, though. We'll explore all options of what we should include in our portfolio.
Hey, Melissa, on that cement plant they're talking about over there, what kind of demand are they asking, and what are they requiring for that new one that's coming in, Loganville area?
30 megawatts.
Starting at 20 and moving up to 30.
And what's the projection, a year, 18 months out?
It'd be a couple of years. A
couple of years, right? I know they purchased the property, correct? That's already done. So that's going to happen.
Well,
the permits have not happened. The permits have not happened.
They haven't had the zone change yet. Mm-hmm. Once they get the zone change, it'll be...
They'll move right along.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they start to pour concrete, we'll know. For sure.
I was just curious.
They're staying pretty low under the radar until they get the zone change. Marilyn Kilpatrick's behind it and wants it to go.
Pretty big area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a bit of controversy or kickback from the valley down there.
Yeah, I heard they all wanted it, so.
Did you read that on Facebook?
Yeah. Bob posted it.
I talked to people at the fair.
Exactly.
That concludes my presentation, unless you guys have questions for me on this part of the report. All right, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's move on to review and possible approval for a 2-year extension of auditing services ending the year 25-26.
Jonathan is in charge of our financial And so he is going to take this, please.
Yeah, so a little background. As per board approval back in September, we sent 9 RFPs to the district's urinating services for 22 through 24 with a possible 2-year extension. Approval was given to Hafen Buckner for those periods and then with a possible extension. So the proposed motion is to approve the extension for Hafen and Buckner with the auditing services going from 2025 through 2026 with the maximum prices of $28,750 and $28,750 for the 2 years. So we have, and a little background, Hafen Buckner has done this obviously for this contract. They've been the auditor during that time, but we've had 3 different auditors during that time. So every year we've had different staff working on the books each year, but they have been the firm that's managing the audit. So
have we been happy? I think we've been pretty happy with them.
Very much so.
Especially with their price. When you look at RFPs from others.
Mm-hmm. Great. We'll move. We approve the extension of the contract.
I would second that. Okay.
All in favor?
We got to.
Aye.
This is your job, Bobby. Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you, Dale.
Dale,
I what? I had to wake up to do that.
That's all right. We have others here that are the same. Jay, discussion of capital projects and budget for discussion only.
Okay. I gave you guys a very light agenda with the chair's approval because this is going to be a long discussion, but this is an important discussion, and I want to make sure that you guys get very good information from this. In 2024, you guys approved a capital budget of $32,637,000. During that process, I then look at what do we anticipate actually spending. You guys have approved the budget, but what are we actually going to spend? In pre-2020, for the most part, what we said was going to be approved by the capital budget and going to get done was done. But since COVID, with supply chain issues, things have changed. Projects that we thought we were going to do in 1 year, the line that we're going to discuss, we had originally slated would be completed in 2025. We're starting it in 2025. And so we go through and look at the cash and say, what do we think that we're going to spend? At that time, we had reported that we thought we would spend $22.4 million in 2025. And so you can see that right there in the center of the, can I point on this? Here it is, right here. So here is 2025, and we anticipated that we were going to spend $22.4 million, leaving us with a balance of $12 million in our cash. We anticipated for 2026 that we would spend $11.4 million, but we talked about the fact that I had included $3 million here in borrowing. That simply was a placeholder to keep us at what the board had set for our threshold of $10 million in our reserves. And we talked about the fact that later in 2025, we would discuss future borrowings and strategies. So here we are looking at that. Now, there's a couple of things that we need to talk about the reasons that we're going to go over this tonight. First off, as we have analyzed, I told you that in my first 90 days, one of the things that we were going to do was analyze and evaluate the timing and the necessity of every project that had been approved. And so as a staff, we all sat down and we kicked off those discussions and we went through every single item on both the capital and the reliability plan to see what do we need to do. The other thing that we looked at is because of reducing our margins, we have, of course, cash flow is adjusted. And so We've spent more money than we thought we were going to in 2025, and I'm going to talk to you about tonight that we have a lot more that we need to spend. And so we need to address that. I don't know why this isn't working, Stephen. Is it just not on?
Press it one more time.
There we go. Is it operator error, Kyle?
No, I haven't watched from your
show. Okay. This, on the screen, is our 10-year reliability plan. You can see that on this plan, it started in 2021, and we have projects slated out through 2028. This is a very complex spreadsheet that we keep for all of our planning purposes, but it is very difficult to read on the screen, and there are a lot of things that have nothing to do with what we're going to be working on in 2025. So what I did was I pulled that out and said, what money do we anticipate we're going to spend in 2025 and in 2026? This is still difficult to read on the screen, so I have printed underneath your guys', you guys have all got them, a larger copy for you to follow along with. These are all of the projects that we anticipate that we need to do in 20, or that we had anticipated spending money in 2025 and 2026. So the first project that we're going to look at, you guys will see on your sheet, is line number 7, and that is, this is our Tortoise substation, and that is the 230 kV ring bus. So for that project, we currently have an approved budget of $10,921,000. We have currently spent to date on that project $7.6 million, and we need an additional $1.2 million to finish that project up. It is slated right now and anticipated to be under the initial budget projection by $1.4 million. This project provides redundancy and reliability system-wide. This project is also required to allow for the 69 kV bus expansion that we're going to go over on line number 16. So the remaining costs of the $1.2 million include contractor labor, commissioning, and testing of relays. Now, if we were to consider postponing the remainder of this project, there would be fees associated with the contractor labor, and we would also be required to delay the 69 kV expansion that would be required to be placed on hold. The next project that we're going to talk about is lines 10 and 12, and that is our Tortoise 138 kV connection and the Tortoise to Gila line. We have an approved budget for those projects of $17.9 million. We have currently spent just over $8 million, and we will require just under $10 million to complete that project. This project is slated to be approximately $400,000 over the initial budget that we had anticipated. This project provides reliability and redundancy for Mesquite. This is our second 138 line from Tortoise to Gila. Our current loads have outgrown our 69 kV backup line. So if we were to choose to postpone this project, there would of course be fees associated with the contract labor delay. But the other thing is the timing of an outage that would happen on our 138 line. If it happened at certain times of the year, we would not have the ability to pack the entire load to Mesquite on our 69 line, and that would require rolling blackouts in our Mesquite area. The next project on your guys' sheet is line 14, and that is the Painted Hill substation 138 kV cap banks. That we have an approved budget of $200,000. None of that has been spent yet. Our 2024 load flow analysis showed that cap banks would be required to maintain voltage and power factor. We are currently evaluating that load factor with the new generation coming into service, which has only been on for approximately 7 days. And Randall is in the final stages of a feasibility study with our engineering firm. We will look at those and evaluate when those are going to be required, but we're right now proposing that this is a project that can be postponed.
Especially with the new line coming in, that's going to lower our loads, and that gives us, much better power factor on the lines.
This is a picture of our Raptor substation. This is our long drive switch yard. And I know you guys have seen a lot of these pictures. Randall and Kevin went over a lot of this with you guys in March. But I want you guys to, I want you to be able to put a picture with where it is that we're talking about and why these are of value. And so, and they have newer pictures, but I like the overall picture of this because then it keeps in mind where it is that we're talking about. So if you guys look at lines 14A, 14B, and 15, this is our Raptor sub, the transmission line, and the long drive switch yard. Those three projects have an approved budget of $12.5 million. We have $3.2 million of contribution in aid of construction for those projects. We have currently spent just over $8 million, and we have a remaining $4 million to spend to complete those projects. That pencils out to show you an under budget projection of $422,000. I want to clarify with that though. In the 2025 budget, we came to you for an additional $2 million for that project because it was more costly than what had originally been anticipated. If you remember some of the things that Randall talked about, we had estimated that each one of those foundations were going to cost $15,000 and they cost $30,000. It took far more dirt work and the wall was far more expensive than what we had thought. So we are showing through this that we will be under budget by $422,000. What that really means is we ask for an additional $2 million and it's only gonna cost $1.6 to finish it up. So we're under the grand total, but that was with a $2 million adjustment and I didn't want you to feel like I was just telling you we're under budget. We did have to come back and ask for that. So these three projects provide redundancy and reliability in Mesquite. They reduce the load on Falcon Sub, allowing for rebalancing of Dino, Painted Hills, and Pulsifer. This is the substation that will feed Crown Cork and the surrounding areas. If we chose to postpone this project, there would be fees associated with the contract labor delay, but we are also under contract with Crown Cork and Seal for the completion of that project. I don't know how much of this I really need to go over because Kevin essentially did my project, my presentation for me earlier, and he showed you where those loads are and why this is important. But again, I want you guys, I want us to be very upfront, and I want you to have your a good understanding of what are these projects and what we're placing priority on.
Okay, now, what happens if you postpone it?
If we postpone this...
The completion, because you've already sunk a lot of money into it. Some are under contract, some parts, but is there some that is not yet been contracted for?
On this project, no.
Okay, so we're essentially committed because we've signed contracts.
Yes, yes. The other caveat with that is that if we do not complete some of these, we do not have the ability to do any of the rebalancing on those substations, and so we're pushing them to their limit. But I put in here, if we postponed, if there were fees associated, so you would understand which one we already had contracts with contractors. Mm-hmm. So this one we would have labor delays that we would have to pay. Okay, line 15A is a security project. This project was recommended based on the Department of Homeland Security Office of Infrastructure Protection assessment that we did last year, two years ago. Yeah. This, there is no immediate financial implication of us delaying this project. However, quantifying risk and the avoided cost when it comes to security is very difficult to do because as long as nothing happens, it costs us nothing. If something happens, then we come back and say, we wish we would have done something to help with security. So if the board feels that this is a risk that you are not willing to take, then we will put this $1.2 million back into the projects and we will reevaluate that for cash. But this is a project that, as of today, there are no financial implications immediate for us postponing it.
So are there certain areas, instead of spending the 1.2, are there two or three areas that are more critical than others that you could spend a little bit of money versus the 1.2, or is it all kind of a lump sum? Because I kind of feel like there's certain substations that are more critical than others. I mean, could we spend $300,000 and get those up to snuff and then maybe postpone the rest?
That's such a great idea. And here's the thing that we have, Randy, and we'll get to it in a little bit. We have 1.2 for this project and then 1.5. The initial 1.2 is for one large project, and it's our most critical, and it's the entire $1.2 million. Gotcha. So if we could do just a $300,000 project, we would have probably left it on there. But that's sure. This project is large, and it's that entire amount.
Kind of the initial
stuff. And it's all got to be spent to complete the project?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Sounds like something we might want to see if we can get a grant on.
Okay.
We have done, like, we've been doing quite a bit of work on security and things.
We have security measures in place, but nothing to
this
level. Nothing of this magnitude. Okay. The next project is, this is a picture of our Tortoise substation, and that is the 69 kV transformer. You can find that on line 16. We have an approved budget of $1.9 million, and currently we have spent about $600,000. We need another $900,000 to complete that. The overall projections for this project show that it will be under budget by $450,000. This project provides reliability and redundancy for Overton, Moapa, and Logandale. We currently have three 20 MVA, the 230 to 69 transformers that are over 50 years old. This brings in this additional transformer. One of the things that is important for as we consider the ability to postpone that, the transformer has already been received and the warranty has begun. So any remaining costs for this project are for contractor commissioning and relay testings. There would be a fees associated with postponing that contractor. The other thing that is critical is that transformers sitting stagnant develop integrity and useful life issues quickly. And so if we have a transformer on the ground, it is better for us to get it put in place. Line 17A is the Overton Crew Building and Truck Barn. The initial approved budget for that was $1.3 million. As we've discussed this, we do not believe that that project could even, I think a more realistic cost to complete is 2.5, and I think it would take even further money for build out to make the building exactly what we needed. As we looked at what it would cost for us to pave around that building and fence, it added quite a bit to that cost. What I want to say about this project is that our Overton line crew has absolutely outgrown the incredibly small space that they are required to work in. If we took you guys on a tour, you would see that entire line crew puts their time in, and the only space that they can get in for air conditioning to get out of the heat in lunch is half of the size of this room. So I do not believe that we, at this time, I propose that we postpone this project, but I have asked staff to evaluate options that would allow us to still expand that and give the crew, meet some of those crew needs without building an entire building in the truck barn at this time.
So you could enlarge that area that's air conditioned now out further?
Yes. Yes, that's my proposal for now.
Oh, very good.
This is a picture of our Arrowhead substation. This is line 17C, 17D, and 17G. These are the Falcon Ridge Bay 2. That's two 20 MVA transformers, the Painted Hills Distribution Bay 4, and then the Arrowhead sub upgrade, which would be two additional 20 MVA transformers. Now, this is an important one for us to talk about. We currently have an approved budget of $3 million for those three. The cost to complete is $11.3 million. The additional budget required for these projects is $8.3 million. Again, the 2024 load flow analysis showed an upgrade in capacity was needed at both Arrowhead and Pulsifer. And again, I don't need to beat this to death, but because Kevin went over so much of why this is important. But here's the difference in this project. When we came to you for the budget of $3 million, it was because the transformers were supposed to take 3 years. And so the $1 million was a payment on the transformer in 2025 for $1 million each. We've now received news back from Virginia Transformer that we've been moved up in the queue, and those lead times are now at 12 months, and that transformer is coming. They've already asked for, they've done the drawings, and they've asked for additional funding. So when I'm talking to you about this, I feel it is very important that we continue this. Kevin's report showed you that when it comes to reliability, we are not maxing out the transformers that we currently have in place. The infrastructure is working. But should one of those fail, because we are at such a high capacity on that transformer, we don't have the ability to move the loads that if one of those transformers failed, we don't have the ability to move those onto those other transformers because they're already reaching their maximum. So the failure of any one of those could result in rolling blackouts in the Mesquite area. And again, this is asking for additional budget. Now, tonight is discussion only. What I want to say is everything that I tell you that I think we should do does not exceed the capital budget that you approved for $32 million. But I am asking to postpone some of these projects and allocate those funds to another one. And we will bring that back to you guys as an action item later in the year. This is just for discussion only. But this project, these three projects were only approved in the budget for $3 million, and we need an additional $8.3 million to get them finished.
But the expenditures come out in time here, it looks like. You, for this year, you're only showing about $1.2 million, right? In the spreadsheet you're showing us.
Yes, except for that we had a meeting yesterday, and Kevin informed us that Virginia has finished the drawings quicker, and they would like to move up one of those pavements because they're already moving quicker than what they had anticipated.
How much does that cost us? About just roughly, just
over $2 million, just for those pavements.
Okay, it's a good and bad. It's a good and bad of it, I guess. Mm-hmm.
But we need 8 more million?
That's not been approved
no,
in the budget.
We
yes.
need 8 more.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Line 17F is acquire property for the Mesquite warehouse. We discussed this with you guys in October for the capital projects. And then when it came back in November for approval, this was scratched from that, but it's still something that we're talking about. So we have outgrown the inventory and equipment storage in this valley, and we need to still continue to evaluate locations and the ability. Randall is not stopping work on the securing of some land for this, but this is one of those projects that we can postpone for now because there's no immediate cash delay, and we're looking at what projects can we put off.
How much property are you looking for?
20 plus acres.
So 20 acre parcel?
Mm-hmm. Do you know a realtor? Just teasing. I'm just teasing.
Good joke.
I told her I was going to come with something.
So whatever. I made quite a few discussions at City Hall with parcels of the city. Many, many discussions just recently over the past 3 or 4 months. And there's a lot of city property out there that potentially could be negotiated on. Mm-hmm. I'm certain of it. Mm-hmm. Now, how that plays out...
We actually have some land that we have... We're in the works on. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Land.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Okay, our next project. This is a picture of the Tortoise 138 KV wood structures. This is the same picture I've already showed you, but those structures that we're talking about is right here at the top of this.
Those wooden poles?
Yes. So this is to replace those three wooden poles going out of Tortoise. We have an approved budget of $500,000. It will cost us about $500,000 to complete. Those would be replaced with ductile iron, and this is for the reliability of all of the OPD-5 service territory. If we look back over our history, two of our long system-wide outages that have affected our entire system have been as a result of wood poles in the Tortoise substation.
I noticed on the spreadsheet that it's showing about 30,000 needed this year, right?
For engineering of it, yes.
Oh, for engineering, okay. No deposit.
Yeah.
We'd wait until the new 138 line was done.
We have
yeah.
to, yeah.
But there's still cash outlay that needs to be done on that now to facilitate that happening. That's why I have it still on the list for you. Okay, next we have line 19 is the Painted Hills sub 138 Cat Bank, and this is the second phase. We've talked about the first phase, so I won't go over that.
Same thing.
Yes.
Same,
yes. Line 20D is security projects. This is the exact same thing that we talked about with the 1.2, but this is 1.5. In an open meeting, we will not discuss what those projects are, but we can discuss those in executive session if you would like. One thing that I do want to point out on this is we have proposed to delay with your recommendation the 1.2. The 1.5, if you look at that sheet, I believe it was 500,000 at the end of 2026, and that is the removal of some guy wires inside or adjacent to the Tortoise substation to allow for those security measures. There's still some things that need to get done. We don't need to spend the entire 1.5 million, but there is about $500,000 that we're anticipating at the end of 2026. I didn't want to completely kick all of that money off. This is a picture of the Tortoise 120 NVA. This is a 230 to 138 transformer from Virginia.
Beautiful.
Isn't that pretty? we've come to that point in our life, right, that we get so excited that we stop on the 95 and take pictures of poles that have been cut in half, and we notice people's transformers, right?
How the world's changed.
This project is very similar. This is, again, those Virginia transformers that we talked about. We have an approved budget of $2.2 million. We need 5.5 to complete the project. So that is an additional budget requirement of $3.3 million. This is the exact same situation where we expected a three-year lead time. It's now come back at 12 months. One of the things that happened with these transformers, too, is that as we looked at our 10-year reliability plan and how our load growth went, you remember that as we looked at the last 2 years, our sales really increased. Well, as Kevin looks at where we're at and graphs all of that usage or the available capacity, we knew we needed to start moving these up because if it was going to take 3 years, we needed to get that infrastructure ordered. The other thing that happens with this, too, is that this 120 MVA transformer is replacing a 75 MVA transformer. This is very comparable to what we're dealing with our 138 and our 69 line. Our load has grown enough that if the current 120 transformer failed, the 75 can no longer pack the load of our system. And so if that were to happen at certain times of the year, then that would require system-wide rolling blackouts because we would be maxed out on that transformer. Again, it's the same thing. The overall allocation of cash that we're asking for is not above what you guys approved on the budget, but you did not give us budget approval more than $2.2 million for this specific project, and so we wanted to bring that to your guys' attention. So where does that leave us? If we assume that we have the same margins that we anticipated for 2025, and Jonathan felt like we're on track to having those same margins, if we spent the money that we're telling you on the projects that we say needs to be spent and we postpone what we can postpone. The other thing that I didn't go over with you guys tonight is that as a staff, we looked at every single capital project too. We approved $3.9 million on annual capital projects, and as we went through that number was at $3.7 million. So, and Randall and Kevin and Kyle, that even Scott, they went through that very closely and said, what is realistic that we're going to get done and how much is it going to cost us? And so I feel we have a very strong number. If we spent the money that we are proposing tonight on finishing the projects we believe need to be done, that leaves us with a cash reserve of $2.8 million. If we spend what we're proposing
in 25,
if we spend what we're proposing for 2026, That leaves us with a deficit of $7.9 million in cash. So what is the answer to that? We currently have $9 million available in our borrowing that was approved. If you guys remember, when we first did our application with CFC for borrowing, we had an application for $35 million. We have $9 million of that remaining. If we borrowed that $9 million in 2025, we would end the year with $11.6 million in our cash reserves. In 2026, if we borrowed an additional $9 million, and this is again spending what we've proposed for 2026, that leaves us with a cash balance in at the end of 2026 of $8.6 million. We currently, our strategic plan currently says that we would keep our cash balance at $10 million. The way that we came up with that was that we always said we would have 3 months worth of power bills. As you guys know, our power bill has increased significantly. And when Jonathan analyzed that, we believe that our cash balance should now be around $12 million. That's just what we set as our feel-good number. There's no requirement. That's just the strategy that you as a board gave to us to maintain as our cash. The other thing that I want to point out to you guys is that in 2027, we're showing that if we did no borrowing, we would have $4 million in as a deficit.
Additional deficit.
But what that is that $16.6 million is I took all of the money that we're postponing and I said we would spend it in 2027. I'm not actually proposing that to you. I'm just saying we can't, it's not just going away. We're postponing it, so we moved it to 2027. I'm not asking you guys to look at 2027 yet. But I think it would be very nearsighted of us to only address 2025. Most of these projects that we are talking about tonight are going to fall over into 2026 to get finished, and we need to address the cash for 2026 as well. So if we borrowed $9 million in 2025, and again in 2026, what does that look like? So here in the center is where will we be, where will our long-term debt be in December of 2025? $43.5 million. If we borrowed $9 million in October of 2025, our outstanding long-term debt would be $52.5 million at the end of 25. If we borrowed again in 2026, and Jonathan has that slated for January 1st of 26, we would end the year with $57 million in debt. As we look out through 27 and 28, if we get to the end of 2028 and we look at what would our balance be, we would already be back down to $47.5 million in long-term debt. You guys know that so many of our current loans are paid off in 2028. We're at that very end of those loan funds. What we had hoped in my talks with Mendes was that as we reach 2028, we would be negotiating a new power contract and we would be paying off those loans. As we look at these projects, both with the timing of our load growth, we're not going to be able to wait until 2028 to do that borrowing. This infrastructure, I believe, for our reliability of our system needs to be put in 25 and 26. That moves up that borrowing. But if you look at 2028, that still leaves us, we're right back down to the $47.5 million in our long-term debt. And if you look at what the value of our plant is, I haven't calculated or had Jonathan calculate out what will be the value of our plant as we close these projects in 25 and 26. But just today, Jonathan reported to you guys that we have $153 million in assets as of today, and we would have long-term debt in the value of 47.5 of that. So we're not over-leveraged in the value of our assets that we have by borrowing this additional $18 million. So we talked with CFC. Jonathan got numbers as of today. The current rate as of today is 5.62% on borrowing, and that with our discounts comes to 5.17%, and that is on a 30-year note. We have a lot of debt structuring options that are available to us, and I'm not going to keep you guys here all night because we're not making the decision on borrowing. We're just talking about what projects need to get done. But one of the things that we can think about with this debt structuring is there's a couple of things. First off, this market is so volatile. The rates have become so volatile. And if we needed to do borrowing in 2025, there's nothing that requires that we borrow all $9 million at once. We could look at it and say, if we see a rate, if we know we have to, say, have $2 million, we borrow $2 million, but we wait, and if there's a dip in the rates, then we borrow the remaining at that time. We're not locked to requiring all $9 million on a specific date in 2025. The other thing that we have available with us through CFC and their debt structuring is the availability of putting in repricing. So right now, if we say, okay, 5.17 isn't exactly what we're hoping for, but we feel like in 3 years' time, the minimum that you can do a repricing is 3 years, so we could bake one in 2028. If we feel that the market could dip in 2028, we could put a repricing in there. You take a risk that if it doesn't, if the market goes back up, then it's higher. But that's something for us to think about. And one of the things that I want to ensure is I don't want us to bake in too many repricings on those loans, but I want to ensure that I leave the next general manager with some options, especially at the end of these loans. If we were going to take, if we take a $9 million loan, I want to put in at least one repricing near the end so that they have the ability to either reprice it or pay it off early, to not lock it for to term. The last time we did borrowing, rates were at a historic low, and we locked the entire term, the entire amount for the entire term, because we didn't think that we would ever see those rates again. But now we're not in that exact same environment, and so I think that we need to think of some different debt structuring options. This is mostly for us to give you guys an idea of where we see as a staff what is our priorities and what needs to be spent, and then also look at the projects that we say that's not a priority. In my mind right now, a truck barn is not a priority. I don't think that we should spend $2.5 million to build a truck barn, but I do think we should spend that money on a transformer that's going to ensure reliability in the Mesquite area or the Tortoise area. So the last thing that I'll leave you with is with these capital projects, I think that it was really valuable for Randall and Kevin to give you guys in March an overview of where are we at on the project. And every month they say, you know, we poured these foundations, or here's a picture of them pulling in the line. But what I've instructed all of the staff that we will start doing in the September-October timeframe is pulling back and giving you that 10,000-foot picture of the project. Okay, we started it here. This is what we thought it was going to cost. This is where we're at. This is how much more we need. And if the project's going to be under budget or over budget, we will discuss it then. If it's going to be over budget, then they put that additional amount on that coming year's capital budget for you guys to approve. But I think that it gives you guys a better understanding of the overall project. And so for tonight, I'm giving you all of this to think about, because it is discussion only. And if you have questions, we have staff here that's available to talk to you about the specific projects. But the other thing is that we're headed to strategic planning in August, and I want us to have this on the forefront of your guys' mind when we're talking about borrowing and strategies for finances. And then we will bring this back to you again in August for you to make a decision on postponing any of those projects, moving any of those projects up, and any borrowing that may need to be done.
So August, it'll be on for an action
item. Yes, sir.
Very good.
I have two questions.
Okay.
Regarding this. I realize, like, we kind of put off a lot of these projects for a while. We wasn't in a good position, and this all came on pretty hot and heavy. Are we going to be getting ahead of the curve? And so in 28 and 29, are we going to just keep borrowing $10 million a year to keep doing this? Or are we going to be getting these big projects done, and then it's going to taper off a little bit?
One of the things that I've seen in my tenure here is that these types of projects are cyclical. So when I first started, we had a ton of growth in the Mesquite area, and we were doing a lot of distribution growth and then adding some substations. This cycle is mostly about transmission. And some of those projects have not gotten put off because we're behind the eight ball. It's because of the supply chain issues and lead times on items. We just physically couldn't get the stuff here so that we could build, like, the transmission line, like I said. So what I think we'll see now is that we will wrap up a lot of these transmission projects, and then we'll start into distribution projects. They're not as expensive as the transmission, but the caveat to that is if there is growth in the Moapa area, then that's split between transmission and distribution. So do I think the projects are going to go away? I don't, but I don't think that we will need to borrow as much. They won't be as expensive once we wrap these up, depending on growth.
And I guess that kind of leads into my second question. How, I get that some borrowing is prudent, good, and that's the way this business works. How much would have we had to raise rates? Like, I felt like, you know, when we raised rates, we probably should have went a little harder or went a little higher. How much higher would have we had to go to be close on this so we wasn't borrowing a bunch more money?
So here's the philosophy behind that you get to pick. Now, I don't know exactly how much more we would have had to raise the rates on energy to not have to borrow. But the philosophy behind that is, do you want today's customers to pay in their rates for the infrastructure that's going to be used for 30 years? Or do you want to borrow that money and then recover a piece of that in your rates over the 30-year life of the infrastructure? And so there's two ways for you to think about that. Do you want today's customers to pay for the transmission line that will be used for 30 years? Or do you want 30 years customers to pay for that, a piece of it, through their rates and amortizing out that debt?
So how does that play with impact fees? You have new people coming in, you have new structure coming in. Impact fees, is there a projection of increasing those?
So when a customer...
That's who's driving the fee.
And they're the ones that should pay.
And I'm not saying we shouldn't have a piece of that, but the majority should go to the new people coming in, or businesses, or whatever they may be.
So what happens with that, Randy, is if you come in and there is new infrastructure that's required for you, and Randall, please jump in and make sure that I'm saying this right. If there are new customers that come in, like a business like Crown, that is a perfect example. We said, okay, we require a substation for that to serve your load. They paid contribution and aid of $2.2 million for that substation, and then we overbuild that substation and pay for a portion of it to facilitate use around it, because it doesn't make sense for us to only build the substation that only serves their needs at this time. So they are paying for that. As load growth happens in Moapa or other areas, they then will also help facilitate paying for that. But there will always be a cost to Overton, because we're always going to overbuild that system.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that as the growth is...
Growth is paying for growth.
Yes, that's the question.
And
is that a percentage based by years, like energy costs go up, we're going to add 3% to impact fees to match that? How do you...
No, because the impact fee that you pay for infrastructure has nothing to do with the rate that you pay for your energy. As the energy rates go up, then the rates on your energy will go up. But if you require new infrastructure, you pay for a portion of that infrastructure.
And it's billed out per the rate increase, et cetera.
Not exactly. and the fact is that people are not paying for a second line who are putting in businesses here. But the fact is, there's two components. One is the cost of putting the stuff in. And the other is the price of energy.
Yes.
We just had a huge increase in energy cost, but we didn't raise the rate to cover that. We raised only a little bit. So shouldn't, when we have a raise in energy rate, shouldn't the price go up with that rate increase? rate, we pay more, but we didn't do that. And so it put us in a bad financial position, I think. And I remember when we were promoted on borrowing $35 million, that was going to cover everything. It was going to cover it all. And so I know things have cost more a little bit, and I can see a little bit of borrowing. But when our margin shrink away that we were using to pay for some of the infrastructure improvements, went from 12 million to 5.
I think that's my concern. Like, we didn't raise rates enough. And that was it all along. Like,
so part of the...
Part of the rate is customer. I know there's a customer problem, mm-hmm. but the fact is people have to pay a fair rate for what they're getting, and we did borrow $35 million to pay for increases. And in fact, we're still paying for some. The people before us did exactly the same thing. I have nothing. We should borrow money for some of the things you're talking about. But we also should make, when we get a price increase directly to us for the energy, it seems to me we should pass that exact number on. Mm-hmm. At least, and so that would limit the amount of money we have to borrow.
I feel like the theory was we had too much margin for a while.
But we were using it for something.
Oh, we were using it.
We were using it for capital.
Now you're trying to do a correction, but I feel like we overcorrected.
Yeah. But anyway, we can discuss it all in strategic planning, but that I think we have to consider that portion.
I agree with you. We corrected a portion of the rate increase by reducing our margins.
25%, I think.
But also, we're thinking about solar and trying to see the impact of that at the same time, correct?
Yes, and we're acting as stewards for the communities that we serve. So one of the things that we said was our rates doubled, but did you as a board want to direct us to double every one of our customers' bills?
No,
and so we said, okay, we will reduce our margins by a portion of that so that we take a part of that rate increase and then the customers bear a part of that. Should we have kept our margins a little bit higher? That's for you guys.
That's for you guys to decide. Yeah,
but that's the philosophy was behind that. I don't think that we didn't... I don't think that we misdid our rate increase, but I do think that we've become accustomed to having a $12 million margin. As we back that down to a $4.5 million margin, you see the cash flow implications of it. But the other thing is it goes back to the theory that I said. That $17 million line, a lot of those projects have been paid with margins that have come from today's customers.
Yeah, so you don't have to borrow.
So we didn't have to borrow. But you have to think of, is that fair for tomorrow's customers that today's customers paid for it?
Part of that was reliability, though. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And then the other piece that I want to just answer to your comment about the $35 million. When the 10-year reliability plan was put into place, it was a $55 million plan, and we said we would borrow $35 million, and $20 million of that would come from our margins based on the rate that we had. In 2022, we had no idea that Crown Cork was going to come in and require a subsidy. So this 10-year reliability plan that I showed you that goes out through 2034, that's based on the growth that we think is going to happen. But that plan does not include necessarily the mine that could come in, because how would we know 5 years ago that a 20-megawatt mine was going to come as well? So that's always going to be ever-changing. We can't be locked to that dollar amount. And the fact is that it's 2025, and we still haven't borrowed the $35 million. We're just now asking for that remaining $9
million. Yeah, we borrowed 27.
Right.
Yeah.
Not 35.
Yeah, we got approved for 35. We got approved for 35, but we have not taken all 35 of it. We still have $9 million of that available.
And that rate increase, is that a one-year, or was it over? You said a one-year rate increase, right, back last November, October?
It's just once. Yes,
one,
that
one
was
time.
A one-time rate increase.
Potentially, November will dictate to whether we need to increase that another 6, 7, 10%, mm-hmm. depending on how solar plays part in that.
Yeah,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys are our rate-setting body. You have the authority to raise the rates at any time that you deem fit. And we will, of course, inform that that information, but we do not have to wait to have that happen. We don't have to go before a commission. You guys have the authority to set those rates. So if in November we come back and say, it looks like we need to self-correct that a little bit, and maybe we don't need a 6%, maybe we need a 2, and we need to add one more dollar to the base fee, we'll look at that.
Easy, Mike.
But I'm just saying, you guys have that ability, and we're not making that decision tonight. But what I do want you guys to think about before August is, these guys are the experts in the field of what infrastructure is needed at the time, and I feel very strongly that what we presented tonight is infrastructure we need to put in now. And so I'm leaving you with that.
I don't think that's the question, is how to pay for it, mm-hmm. at least for my mind, is I think for us, we agree. You guys have done a good analysis. The question is, how do we structure the payment for this? You're suggesting only borrowing. I think maybe a combination here of rate increase after we see the actual impacts. You know, but we need to have that on the table too.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been expedited because of Virginia Transformer going from a 3-year to a 1-year, dropping about in half on the lead time. That's why it's pushing that. But we're already at 70% equity. When we started our borrowing, we borrowed $27 million. We were at 70%. That dropped us to 57%. We're already back to 70%. So the $9 million this year, $9 million next year, we're still not going to go below 60% equity. Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, where we should be. If we're 70, 75, 80%,
today's customers are too high. Our customers are paying for today's
infrastructure. They're paying too much. So we need
Where's that come from?
CFC, anybody will tell you that.
I remember the course we took on financial planning.
They want you to be at about 50%.
Well, we take it, and at 40%, we get a discount with CFC. That's the minimum that we can go to is 40.
Mm-hmm. But if we're, they don't want you to be above 60. They'll say 55% and about where you need.
They're in the loan. They're the bank too.
They're the loan business. They're not in the
process. The other thing that is different for us with other people that you attend classes with too and talk about that equity, because equity management is a huge deal in the co-op world, and you'll hear a lot of talk about this as you attend these first classes, Randy. The difference is, as a co-op, you pay back your capital credits to your customers based on your equity. So they have an equity threshold that is set in their tariffs, and as soon as they're above it, they start cutting checks to those customers. We don't have that. We don't have that. So our equity can be a little bit higher, but the model and the thought behind it is the same. When is your customers paying for the infrastructure? Are today's customers paying for it, or are future customers paying for the use of that over the life of it?
Well, I think to Mike's point, I think the mixed bag may be something to look at a little closer, as far as maybe a little bit of a loan, maybe the base rate easy, and then maybe a slight increase somewhere to kind of offset partial and not all a loan. I'm not saying that's what we do, but I do like the idea of a multi-factor positioning.
And I think that it is, it's a guarantee that at the end of the year, we are going to have to reevaluate rates. You don't have this large of an expense increase and put together, I mean, honestly, it is, we did a cost of service study with an entity that's what they do, but it is still the best educated guess on what those rates are going to recover. And then you throw into that the uncertainty of solar generation, and we're going to have some discussions on renegotiating exactly what that rate should be.
On these major projects, right now they're going to be $8 million. In 5-10 years, they're going to be $16 million.
We used to build the substation for $2.5 million, and now we're building them for $4 million.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if you could speed this up and get it built and facilitate all of these the best we can, you're going to save money long term. Mm-hmm. It's just the pain of getting there.
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
But I will say the other thing is that the co-op business, we're not in the co-op business. We're in the utility business. There's a profit business, a utility business, and a co-op. And so the rules that CDC, who really is co-op, really, I mean, we're a small minority of that group, they don't have exactly the same situation we do. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things on the payments out back to the customers, we don't do that.
Right.
So our business model is different, and I don't think we can use the rules necessarily they use. I mean, we have to evaluate it and look at it, but I think we need to do thinking on our own a little bit too, and not accept exactly what CDC says, because they're in the home business. Mm-hmm. They're not in our business.
Yeah.
And we can't bankrupt our customers, for goodness sakes.
Right.
But they have to pay for the future. Future customers have to. But, yeah. Okay, so we just need to balance that.
Yes.
I have one question, Randall. On 16, Project 16, the 69 Bay Cordes, is Lincoln doing any participation in that project?
Yes, they are. It's part of our negotiations when we finalize all the assets. We're talking about that.
Okay, because right now they're 50% owner in that bay.
Right.
And so any project we do up there, they should be participating in that to maintain that.
Yeah, and they've talked about eventually they want to get off the 69 system, right? That's their goal. So that's kind of a tough subject that they don't really want to put a lot of money, but they're trying to get away from. So that's part of the discussion as we go forward. Lisa meets with Dave. That's part of the negotiation on what kind of participation they have. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's move on here. Let's see, have we got the public comments? Need to replace?
Doesn't look like it.
Trustee comments? Approval for next board meeting? Wednesday, August 20th, at the Mesquite Boardroom. Mesquite?
I'll make a motion that we have our next board meeting August 20th, 3 p.m. in the Mesquite Boardroom.
I'll second that motion. We have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any?
Dale, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, thank you.
Any opposed?
You guys are rambling on.
You're telling me. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would like to ask for an executive session, please.
Okay, let's just take a short 5-minute, 10-minute break, whatever. And have
let's do five, because I'll be fast.
5 minutes. 5 minutes.
Becky, before you go. See you.